This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
That bank here, he's got his own billiard.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not billiard. Not the billiards. It was... Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Niggas, I'm not afraid to let the night sing out. It can ring out. Got one more minute for last call. Two drunk players leaning on the wall.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the mothership as always. And of course, joining me, horse of course, and that is Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 459 of the longest running episodic Gold Standard. How's it going, JR?
Not bad.
You're a TV star.
Yeah. I am.
Fucking TV star now. Actually, your T-shirt's a star. You're just some schlub that was sitting in a booth.
National
TV shirts.
National TV star. And you know what? So the other girl that was in this. So I guess we should clarify what it was, because I want to dive into the details. First of all, let's bring in our third member of our team here, the Jimmy Jam Garvin, to the rest of the Freebirds. That is Kelly Nelson. Kelly, how are you?
Hello, everybody.
Actually, it's Pete's the Jimmy Jam, right? You're Buddy Jack.
I'm the Buddy Jack. Right. Buddy Jack, please.
You're the Buddy Jack, yeah.
JR's
Michael Hayes. I'm Gordy, and yeah.
And D'Amato is Big Daddy Dink when he comes on.
He's the big kahuna.
All right, so Travel Channel, and I think this should be online. I haven't checked yet today, but it looked like they had all the episodes archived online. So the Travel Channel, Food Paradise. This thing was filmed last December. Myself, the cowboy, Mr. Roger Morissette, big old Will from Texas, and my cousin Matt happened to be invited over to Boneheads last December. And I was talking to Will about it last night because it's to me, it's like crazy the timing that, you know, I don't anticipate Will probably visiting that many times to my house just because he happened to be on this like once in a lifetime road trip. So he happened to be here for two nights, and it happened to be the night that, you know, Matt at Boneheads invited us over because they were getting filmed from a national TV show. So it was crazy anyway. So we ended up going there, and they interviewed us for a while. Like, we were at the table with the cameras for like a good 15, 20 minutes, like really breaking down the wings. And they comped our food, which was cool. And we've been waiting and waiting for this thing to air. And the last I had heard, about a month and a half ago, they were back on scene filming some B-roll. And then last week, Matt finally told me, he's like, don't say anything until the 10th, and then we're going to air on the 13th. So last night at 8 p.m., we had about 7 minutes of fame for Boneheads. The first 6 or 7 minutes or so of Food Paradise was on Boneheads, opening up the show. And yes, the first faces you see of customers, myself and my cousin Matt, with my Hall & Oates, my legendary Hall & Oates shirt, and Matt saying how I eat meat all the time. That's kind of the catchphrase now for him. But there was also another girl on there, Jess from 92 Pro FM, was in the house. And I don't know if they brought her in because she goes there anyway or if there's a local celebrity. And I was telling Frenzo, I would argue that I think I'm more well-known than Jess from 92 Pro FM. She may be known locally in Rhode Island, but she's not heard worldwide like I am, right? Am I off on that?
I know people that work and worked at Pro, but that's – Travel Channel's a cable channel. I mean, it's watched all over the country, you know? And
no,
think
no,
about
well,
all
she
those
was on
listeners
that, I'm
we
saying.
Have.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
She was on.
No, no one's gonna know.
She was on the
– oh, no one knows.
Yeah, but my point is she was on the Travel Channel, but
right.
More people would know me, right? Because they listen to me around the world. She's only known in
right.
Rhode Island. I'm a bigger star.
No, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying.
My point is I'm the biggest star that was on that show last night besides the host of Fruit Paradise. Anyway, tongue-in-cheek.
Well, it depends. The PWO guys may think Will is a bigger star.
Yeah, I think Will
true.
May
okay.
be
I, me and Will, star. And I would even argue Roger, maybe number three. And then Jess would be number four. And you know, my cousin Matt is in that band. He like toured Japan and stuff, like Jesse and the Rippers. So I would say, I'd say we're top four, and then Jess from 92 Pro FM would be number five.
Maybe.
How about that?
It's entirely possible. Yep.
Anyway, everyone should check it out. It was a good time. Will got his moment of fame. My mind is blown, I think was his catchphrase with his big laugh. So I think it was cool. It was cool. I'm glad we made it off the editing floor. I was worried that we'd get cut all together. I think the reason we didn't get shown more is they didn't do the wings that we talked about, which were the baked potato wings. They focused on a couple of the other flavors instead of it during the time that they had. So that's why I think like we didn't get more FaceTime was because the wing we talked about didn't end up getting featured. So there you go.
Yeah.
Hmm. I think D'Amato would have enjoyed seeing the Breakfast at Tiffany's, and maybe, you know, Travel Channel would have done a little music behind it or whatever. But I think it's funny, though, that, like, of all the times you go into Boneheads, it's the one time Will's ever been in the state of Rhode Island or whatever.
I know, right?
It seemed like a roll of the dice that he's actually there that day.
So it was crazy. And, well, we knew, because Matt had told me that they were filming something and invited us. They kind of did an invitation only for that. Like, they closed the doors for it.
Right.
So they kind of opened it up to, like, the loyal customers that he knew where they come and talk really well about the restaurant or whatever. So we were on the invite list, but still it was pretty crazy timing that Will just happened to be in those few days and they were filming that. So it was good. It was cool. It was neat to see myself on national TV. So
good for Matt, our pal Matt at Boneheads. They deserve the national recognition because they're an awesome wing place, and good for them as well.
Although he was pissed because they said Warwick, Rhode Island instead of West Warwick.
Oh geez.
So he wasn't happy because he was afraid that the people may get confused. But I think if you look it up, they'll find it. I don't think, you know, sometimes you don't understand like the importance of a west or a east when you're like from another state. You know, they might just think it's like a section of Warwick or whatever. But there is a difference, a big difference in some areas.
Yes, very much so.
So that was the big news last night. The big news today, you know, I don't know, called sad yet, but at least troubling news, is the status of Ric Flair and the Nature Boy, who's in the hospital. Here's the latest update from Ryan Satin at Pro Wrestling Sheet. WWE Hall of Famer Ric Flair underwent surgery Monday after he was hospitalized for heart-related issues, but currently is out of the procedure and resting. A rep for WWE confirms that Flair's out of surgery, resting at the hospital. No additional information on what type of procedure. He was admitted to the ICU Saturday after his family took him to the hospital. His rep last night kind of really shook things up, saying, you know, we need prayers and thoughts. We're going through a tough medical issue. TMZ then reported today that he was in a medically induced coma prior to the procedure, and now they're saying he has a long road ahead. I don't know how, you know, the day went for you guys. I would say there was a stretch there between, like, 11 a.m.-ish and, like, this afternoon that it seemed like he was dying today, right? I mean, that was, like, the word, like, that he was pretty much getting, like, last rites. Like, that's what it seemed like for a little bit. Yeah, and then more and more leaked out that he was going to surgery and now he's resting. And now they're, instead of saying, you know, I don't think it's good, but they're still saying like long road ahead to me makes it more than like, you know, hours to live kind of thing. Where were you guys? Kind of, what were your thoughts along the day? Were you preparing for the absolute worst at times?
Yes. They made it sound like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was rushed in and they were talking about heart issues. And I don't know if anybody remembers this or not, but I guess when he was in WCW, I think late 98, I think it was a house show in Tampa, and he collapsed during a tag match. Not like collapse like Shawn Michaels' fake 95 collapse, but like he was in the corner and he just slumped, and I guess his arms had tingled, and he was having like chest spasms or something. So he got hospitalized for that. They say that wasn't a heart issue, but I mean, I don't know what else it could possibly have been. But so obviously there's something either cardio or pulmonary going on there.
Well, they said it was like a few things, right? Wasn't it like his heart? And then wasn't it like something alcohol related issue? Like I saw that at some point, and then I saw like a third thing.
Yeah, the alcoholism has affected his heart finally after years and years, decades.
I mean, apparently he was going in anyway for something less clearly serious. And then this just kind of like happened. So I don't know if this was really what happened and they were downplaying it at the start or if this did come out of nowhere. But I would say like about 1:30, 2 o'clock, I was anticipating changing the main event format this week, to be honest with you.
Well, there were rumors out there too that Charlotte had left. I mean, when people were saying Raw, but then I was like, well, she's not on Raw. So, but it could have just been like, you know, names getting messed up, like was she leaving the SmackDown tapings, but then she was in China, right? And she came home. So I don't know. There was like a lot of kind of, you know, weird information floating around out there about her status, and people thought her going to the hospital was a bad sign that basically like, this is it, like get there.
Right.
So I think there was a lot of rumors. Kelly, what was kind of your day like with this?
Well, yeah, I had the day off from work, so I had, you know, all the time in the world to keep checking for updates. And yeah, I mean, especially with the last few years, you unfortunately get used to, the legends of the 80s, 70s, and 80s passing away. So, but, you know, it sounds like, yeah, he probably had a pretty major heart procedure. And that, you know, speaking from my father's experience years ago, he had several heart issues. So it will be a long road ahead for the Nature Boy. You know, and the guy's lived a hard life, so mm-hmm. it's not surprising. I mean, let's hope for the best, and maybe this will be the turning point that he finally, you know, slows down and acts his age, right?
You would think so, but he could also go all Frank Gallagher, get the new liver, and then still drink. So it's impossible, but hopefully he has the Frank Gallagher's lives. You know, obviously, you know, I'm going to have to talk about his legacy. But it would be tough. Like, I don't think anyone's really prepared for this because he is such a, like, he is still such in the forefront of wrestling culture. He's not someone that's faded away where you kind of, I don't want to say forgot about him, but you're not, you know, he's in your thoughts regularly because he's on the news. Like, he pops up at conventions. He's here and there. Sometimes he's on Dirty TV. He's just on the newest, is it Table 3 he's on or whatever?
Well, it was supposed to be tonight, and they pulled it.
Okay, right. But, you know, he's on
shit.
It
was a table for three tonight, but they pulled it. But he's still around.
Yeah, he's actively in our consciousness of someone that's still, like, active in the wrestling business. So it's, you know, that's always makes it so much tougher, too. So it's, it definitely came out of left field. We wish the best for the Nature Boy. We're hoping he comes out of things okay, and we don't have to, you know, do any kind of update, you know, further update in a negative way, and hopefully it's only positive thoughts for Rick. So any other comments you guys want to touch on before we get going?
Nah, just get better, Rick. Get better.
Prayers, man. Greatest of all time. Prayers. Let's get you back on TV and get you back in everyday life, please. All speaking right. of everyday life,
yes.
he was in the NWA when this show was going on. He was the world heavyweight champion when this show was going on. But we won't see him, obviously. Tonight, guys, we're back in the house. Kelly, last week we were in your ballpark.
Yeah.
It's a dump, just to let you know.
And
tonight you're back in our office. We're back in the office. So let us dive in, JR, to, and Kelly, September 22nd, 1986, this evening, from, of course, the home office, 33rd Street, Madison Square Garden, in New York City. The other half of the roster was in a actually probably much nicer. Well, I mean, September in New York is not uncomfortable. It's probably nice and fall seasonal, but they were in West Palm Beach, Florida at the old auditorium. All we have is that Ricky Steamboat fought Jake Roberts and Randy Savage defended the Intercontinental title against George Animal Steel. So the top of those two matches, well, one match really sucks. Unless you, of course, we love Savage. And Jake Steamboat was probably pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. So who gives a shit about the rest of the card? But that's where the rest of the roster was. They were in West Palm. JR, anything else?
Yeah, we do have some notes here from Mr. Jarvis talking about our last what's gone on since our last visit here in August. We had the final episode ever of Championship Wrestling aired on August 30th. And Kelly, did Superstars start right after that pretty much?
Yeah, right. It was a seamless transition, wasn't it?
Right, I believe so. In that episode, we also had the coronation ceremony for King Harley Race. The final match for the series on Championship Wrestling was the American Express. I'm guessing he meant the U.S. Express, unless he meant the credit card company, against Gino Carabello and Steve Lombardi. Ever since our other guy disappeared, I feel like Jeff has maybe been infected by his, it's like one little thing here and there. The following week on 9/6, WWF began airing two weekly syndicated programs. Here we go. Wrestling Challenge began airing, and Championship Wrestling became Superstars of Wrestling. Thanks to work with NBC, McMahon gave an updated look to the shows. And that week, we saw the return of Jesse Ventura to the announce booth after a five-month absence. We also got the TV debut of Coco Beware and the return of Kamala. Guys, we'll be talking about next week, at least one of them. On the 9/13 episode of Superstars, we had two interesting wrestlers of note in the days before they see stardom. In one, we had Randy Savage taking on Troy Martin, who of course would go on to be a famous wrestler later in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And also the British Bulldogs against Les Thornton and Jack Foley, another guy that would go on to pretty big heights. Hmm. 2 days after this show, WWF would retire another one from its programming schedule, thank God for us anyway. Tuesday Night Titans, or TNT, had begun airing back on May 29th, 1984, on the USA Network, the style of a late-night TV talk show. Vince McMahon and Lord Alfred Hayes appeared on the show for the first episodes since 1986. Or, I'm sorry, for the first 86 episodes. Mean Gene took over for the final 13, and it ended on September 24th on episode 99. How many did we end up reviewing, Scott? Do you know? Probably at least
half of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we didn't do the early, early ones, right? They didn't have those up when we got into it, right?
No, a lot of the early ones started because we got a lot of the 2 hour ones, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think we stopped.
I didn't think we did any of the 84 ones, though, right? Didn't we stop? I thought they started for us in early 85, like before.
No, we did the 84s because remember that dreadful December one with Butcher Vashon's wedding
Forget it.
Albano and awesome Dr. D. David Schultz pretty much like acting like 84 Steve Austin. Oh, no. We definitely did those god awful 84s.
Yeah, because
those were all two hours. Yeah, no, we got through probably, I would say probably June 85 is probably when we got through them, I would think.
Anyway.
They were dreck. They were fucking dreck.
Right. Well, that'll do it for the Jarvis note. So that takes us into the garden tonight where Gorilla and Lord Alfred Hayes are in the booth. Of course, no Jesse back yet for us, but we'll see him a week from tonight. In our opener, we have Kelly. This is fitting that you're here tonight, of course, for one of your favorite all-time teams because they're kicking the show off for us tonight, and that is the Islanders taking on the Moondogs.
The Moondogs were a favorite team.
That's
Sorrow's favorite team, the Moondogs.
The graphic says Huku, so we're off to a good start as always, H-U-K-U. Of course, we talked about the transition from Tonga to Haku at the big event. Good to see Tama back in the mix. Of course, he was the former Tonga kid, right? I'm not mixing that up.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Putting him with Haku was a sharp idea, I thought. Haku well-suited for tag action. And, of course, he had been working with our friend Siviafi, but he was going nowhere fast. So he's gone, at least from this tag team situation. He's still around. And Tama steps in. Al is very surprised at how quickly they've gelled. And Gorilla credits that old Samoan blood in their veins. Spot's looking extra gross tonight, I thought. Tom and Spot open things up as Gorilla notes the colorful gear of the Islanders. Al thinks the Moondogs are the favorites as we get underway. Spot lands a shoulder block to start, but Tama gets a pair of leapfrogs and a chop before tagging Haku, who hip-tosses Tama onto Spot for two. Things break down as everyone gets to the ring, ending with the dogs getting whipped together and bailing to the floor. Rex comes in to restart, but he gets worked over by Huku before landing a kick to the test of strength. Rex runs Haku into the buckle, and Gorilla chastises the decision, of course, because Haku's hard head doesn't feel a thing. Tama tags back in and works the arm, and Spot's able to tag in. That doesn't go well, because Tama goes right back to the arm as well, and then tags Haku for a double chop. Spot takes Haku down, as Gorilla says the dogs have been sluggish tonight, wonders if they got their wrong dog food before the match. Rex tags in, but Haku hammers away, tags in Tama, who goes to the arm. Tama hits the ropes, but Spot yanks the top rope down, and he tumbles to the floor. Rex baits Haku and the ref inside. Spot works over Tama on the floor, and the dogs keep up the trickery, running interference for each other while chucking Tama back and forth from the floor to the ring. Rex took Tama back inside with a nice suplex for two, and the dogs continued to bully Tama to control the action. The dogs continue to double team and keep Tama trapped while playing games with the ref. The tide finally turns where Rex comes through the ropes but eats Tama's knees. Haku catches the hot tag and mows right through both Moondogs as the crowd's all fired up. Haku crunches Rex with a clothesline, follows with a back elbow for two. The dogs then collide in the ring. Haku slams Rex, and Tama flies off the top with a great big splash for the win. And, like, watching all this, you could tell this is what they wanted poor Siviafi to be doing. Like, the great timing on the moves, the big splash, just, like, everything that, you know, he couldn't do, Tama just does, like, with his eyes closed throughout this whole match because he's so much better. But you could tell, like, this is all they wanted on Afi. And if he could have delivered any of this, they probably just would have stuck with him. Fun opener for a great classic tag formula. A really hot finish. Tama's great. You could tell this is going to be a fun team right out of the gate. The dogs worked hard, too. And they're doing their things like good veterans, putting over the new team. So I went 2.5 on this opener. I really liked it, Scott.
I gave it a 2.5 as well. Your official time, 13:17. So there's an opener that deserved some extra time. I'm glad that Huku Roku found a tag partner that was better than Siviafi. The chemistry between these two is automatic. And Tonga gets it. I mean, obviously, the guy worked with Piper, for Christ's sakes. So, and Snuka for a period of time. So he obviously gets it. There's no doubt about that. When was the last time we saw Sexy Rexy? It's probably been a while, right? Because we had this whole conversation last show, or the last house show, Kel, when you were on, about the last time we saw Rex.
Yeah, he was probably hurt, right? It was like early 85.
Right, so it was hurt. So this is the first time, so this is the first time we see Rexy here at the Garden. I'm sure he's been on some other show. I think I saw him on a Boston house show, too. And you know, I'm sorry. I'll definitely toot my horn for the toot the horn of the Moondogs when they're a team. Like, I know Spotty's had some stinkers in a solo capacity, but when they're a team, they're really good to watch. They're good, serviceable guys. They put over their moves. They put over the faces. They let, you know, matches kind of flow. They don't really, you know, fuck around in the ring, and it doesn't seem slow. I'm going to give Spotty and Rexy credit. I mean, they really know how to put over a good team when they get them in front of them, and they really work hard. I applaud the two of them when they get in the ring, because they do the right thing against other teams. And I just think it was a great match. I mean, obviously, Haku and Tama are really good, and I agree with you, JR. Immediately, you can tell these guys are going to be a lot of fun to watch. They move around constantly, no wasted motion. They don't do a lot of rest holds. I mean, even if they're not, like, going 100 miles an hour, they just seem to always be moving. And that's the kind of teams that, you know, as you're seeing the evolution of the tag division in the company, you need more teams like this that consistently move around. They're not slow and fat and dawdling in the ring. And I think that's key for the company over the next year or so, as they continue to kind of churn out the old broken down guys and getting to the younger, more athletic guys and making the tag division as good as it's going to be in a couple years. I wanted to give it 3 stars. I was close, but I couldn't go that far, but I really, really liked it. And the Islanders are going to be a fun team to watch. I agree with you, JR. So 2.5 for me. What do you think, Kel?
Yeah, same as the both of you, 2.5 stars. Really liked it. The Islanders, yeah, they are a super fun team, and we're going to see a lot of fun stuff with them, both as baby faces and heels coming up. And they're kind of underrated, totally underrated when it comes to this era, but they're one of the best teams. And Tama, yeah, he's always so enthusiastic, both as a heel and as a face, so expressive, just has great charisma. And he was a great pro wrestler at this time. And it's funny how Siviafi was a replacement for Jimmy Snuka, but then he himself is replaced eventually by Tama. That's hilarious.
Who basically kind of indirectly was being built to maybe replace Jimmy Snuka.
Replace Snuka, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's all so connected and complicated. Yeah, it's interesting. Tama was great at bumping and selling in this match, and was great with the heat and the hot tag. Got a big pop from the crowd. This was their debut, and this match got over. The Islanders got over. The Superfly Splash by Tama was awesome. The crowd didn't turn on him or boo him for trying to be a imitation Jimmy Snuka, because he is a star and he's great. And yeah, who cares about Siviafi now?
He's done.
Official. He's, you know, he sticks around, unfortunately. Well, we're probably not going to see him too much on the MSG shows, if at all. I'm not sure. But he was definitely a fixture of the Saturday TV well into 1988. He's still around.
Which speaks, I mean, to his credit, I guess, that, you know, he's been terrible and not probably what they hoped he would be. But for him to stick around then and get gainful employment for at least, you know, another year and a half to 2 years after he was kind of relevant is good on him.
I suppose. I mean, at least he was in the WWF instead of one of the territories that was swirling the toilet at this point. So there's that.
Right.
But yeah. yeah. What a difference a charismatic wrestler makes. That's my last note for this. And yeah, the Moondogs, Scott, you're right. I've rarely ever seen them in a bad match. They were great in the early 80s. They were great in Memphis against the Fabulous Ones. And here now they're, you know, firmly in the role of putting over the up and coming teams, and they're doing a great job doing that. So, yeah.
What was where did Tama go? Because when did he leave? Was it drug? I know he's got drug issues later, but was that partially there too?
AWA.
Yeah. In between stints, that's a good question. He may have done AWA. I think, yeah, he had a real bad drug issue because he was being pushed big time. He wrestled Piper at MSG in 84 when he was 19 years old, and it was main event. It was the main event of the card.
Right.
Youngest man to ever main event an MSG show. And then was in a program with Snuka, who himself had to leave for drug rehab. That's why the Tonk Kid was brought in the first place. And then Kid left because of drug issues, and then Snuka. I'm not sure exactly where he was in between stints. And then, of course, this stint ends because of drug issues. It's really a shame because he was a really great talent. And, just unfortunate for him.
All right, there you go. Well, we'll see how
the.
Checking
now. While you're doing the next match, JR, I'm going to check a little, do a little history here, see if I can find him.
Okay, yeah. Look around. Wikipedia doesn't really have much about what he did in between.
No, it just says he entered into a first major feud with Snuka's rival, Roddy Piper, and then the next paragraph says, in late 86.
Right, he was with.
So I don't know if he was just dealing with drug issues and wasn't anywhere.
I think he was wrestling somewhere, but somewhere pretty under the radar, because he, kind of burned a bridge there for a bit, so.
There you go. So some own blood. Okay. It's running hot. All right. Match number two is a guy we saw last month here at MSG who looked pretty good, and we commented that he could have a future perhaps, and that is, of course, Nick Kaniski, son of Gino, taking on Steve Lombardi, who, and this is the first time we've seen Lombardi, right? But when did he first show up in WWE? Has he been around for a while as a jobber?
Yeah, he was there in 84, maybe even 83.
Okay, so he's been around for a while.
Yeah, he does a lot of TV jobs. Like, he was on a lot of the championship wrestling shows. And
Late 83, it looks like he showed up. But we haven't seen him here in MSG yet. So this is his debut in the Garden. And he's taking on Kaniski, who's back for another month. And then, of course, taking on a guy trying to work his way up the ladder, but pretty much just fodder at this point, Steve Lombardi. Kaniski sells his awesome Canada track jacket. Al puts over Lombardi, who's known to be a bit aggressive. Kaniski controls off the bell until Lombardi decks him during a break on the ropes. Kaniski gets pissed and slugs Lombardi to the floor and then works the arm when he returns. Lombardi's able to sneak in a slam, but Kaniski trips him up and goes back to the arm. Gorilla basically calls Lombardi dumb and says he has no chance, but Al talks about his experience. Kaniski survives a headbutt and slams Lombardi and goes to the arm. Al says Lombardi is a ship lost at sea, but he's able to duck a wild Kaniski dive off the middle rope. Then he wastes some time and goes to the eyes before getting a chin lock. Kaniski fires up and misses a charge and goes flying over the top to the floor in a nasty bump. Kaniski's, I mean, when they, like, you hear about, like, wrestling a broomstick, like, he's literally just wrestling himself in this match. Lombardi snaps his neck as he comes back in and blocks a sunset flip with a right hand for two. Kaniski reverses a whip and shoots Lombardi into the post shoulder first and starts to punch away. Kaniski follows at a backdrop and a hip toss and then a nice drop kick before finishing with a bridging German. Kaniski, I thought, looked good again. He carried this lug to a pretty watchable match, and again, it's just him working himself. I think he could have pretty good matches if they gave him better opponents, and he could have had a future here as well. Lombardi's just a fucking mess. I mean, that looked like shit here. I went half a star for this one, Kelly.
Yeah, that's what I went with as well. The crowd hated this match right from the get-go. There was even boos for Nick Kaniski. I mean, yeah, he's technically good, but he just... in the charisma department, he just doesn't come off as somebody that the fans are going to get behind.
Right.
And I'm not sure what happened to his career, because this would be his last MSG match. Bye-bye for Nick Kaniski.
So Lombardi, just to clarify, Lombardi actually was in MSG a couple times in 84. His first ever match in MSG, he lost to Mad Dog Vachon. And then later that year, he was in a Battle Royal. Antonio Inoki won, and then this is his return here. So it's pretty much a little over two years.
Hmm.
Yeah, I thought that would be strange that he hadn't had an MSG match and he'd been with him for almost 3 years. This was kind of a dull match. Well, it was a dull match. Zero heat for Kaniski's comeback. This was literally putting me to sleep at one point, and I was watching it. I was watching at like 11 o'clock in the morning, so it wasn't even late at night. But the German suplex by Kaniski looks great, and that's pretty much why I gave it a half star. Otherwise, it was pretty much a dud.
I gave it 4.5. I think Steve Lombardi has a future, and no, I'm only kidding. I did give it a star, though. I thought it was okay. I thought they both guys moved around well. I mean, Nick Kaniski's pretty, like you said, JR, he's pretty serviceable if he had some, you know, decent guys in front of him, but obviously the nepotism thing is starting to run its course. I think they're running out of legend sons. So,
right.
We're still waiting for where George, what the hell was his name? I'll have to remember his name. Arnie Skolin's, George Skolin. Is that the son? He showed up at a lot of Spectrum House shows. I think they're running out of sons. So, this match was fine. I liked it. I mean, the crowd kind of shit on it. As a matter of fact, the crowd in general I thought was really good on this night. And according to Graham, it was not like a full blown sellout with the the Felt Forum wasn't open. I mean, it's a Monday in September. It's a school night, so probably not a lot of kids were there. So a little over 12,000. But the crowd was amped up, though, and they get better and better as the night progresses. But I thought this match was fine. I won't say any more about it, but it was okay. I gave it a star. I think Steve Lombardi served his purpose as a good jobber.
Oh, he was fucking terrible. He's not sorry. He literally looked like a guy that had just made his debut like the night before in this match. He just looked lost. I mean, it doesn't help that Gorilla and Al are completely fucking burying him. Like, the Gorilla basically says he's a fucking moron. He has no chance to win. You know, he's a ship lost at sea out there. he just looked completely like deer in headlights throughout that whole match.
Well, there is a point I'm going to make later on about some of the other jobbers on this evening, but. Yeah, they were burying the shit out of him. It's funny how I think it's good that the three of us are really starting to capture like the in-joke innuendos and kind of alternative announcing approach to these local house shows, because Gorilla and Alfred are just two douchebags sometimes on some of these fucking guys. Yeah. And this was one reason. And they do a lot more later on, but I don't know. I gave it a star. It's fine. It serves its purpose. This next match,
Lombardi's he may be one of the worst people we've seen so far on these shows. I'm sorry, in this match.
It gets
anyway.
Well. There's one guy later on that gets pretty. That I think is worse, but we'll get there.
Perpetually worse.
This match is this match coming up is not terrible.
No, and that is our buddy Billy Jack Haynes taking on the old Ace Cowboy Bob Orton. Haynes getting a break from Hercules after twice in a row that we saw him, to meet the Cowboy. Gorilla knows this is the first time we're seeing Jimmy Hart out there with Orton since the big changeover when Cowboy Bob sold out, left Roddy Piper to go make more money being the bodyguard for Adrian Adonis. And he mocks Jimmy's attire, says because, of course, Jimmy has tights under his jacket for some random reason. I don't think he's wrestling tonight. We haven't. Don't see him in any of the matches. Gorilla also calls Haynes a rough cookie, which made me laugh. We start with a lockup in the corner with a clean break as Al talks about all the hype around Billy Jack, who grabs a side headlock and uses his power to overwhelm Orton and toss him from the ring. Billy Jack continues to maul him until Orton stooges out to the floor. Orton comes back in but gets trapped in a head scissors. Orton breaks free but whiffs on an elbow drop, and Billy follows with an atomic drop and then continues to counter all attempts of offense, frustrating Orton. Orton powers out of a head scissors and right into an airplane spin that renders both men woozy. Billy recovers and slugs away, but Orton catches him with a falling clothesline for two and then goes to work, focusing on the lower back. Haynes comes back with a big clothesline and a slam and then heads to the middle rope and lands a forearm to the head for two. Follows that up with a full Nelson, but Orton gets an assist from Jimmy to get to the ropes. Orton catches him with a knee to the face on a charge, but Billy Jack shrugs it off and lands a blow. Orton drags him down and rolls him up, gratuitously grabbing the tights to get the win. Really awkward finish there. I'm not sure what they were kind of going for, but it's the way they end up doing it. It's pretty awkward. I thought the match was pretty fun. I thought Haynes showed some good fire and offense. Orton is just so good at stooging, selling, offense, like just everything. The match chugged along, too, with some pretty good pacing. There was no long heat segments. They kept going back and forth. I think if you go five more on this one and give it a hotter finish, it could have really been kind of a sneaky hidden gem of this era. Or maybe it prevents it from being a dog. I don't know. But either way, we're right in the middle. So I went 2 stars on this one, and it was good to see Billy in there with someone other than Hercules. What'd you think, Scott?
I actually gave this 2.5. I really like this match. I like Billy Jack Haynes. I really do. I think, and I'm really stunned that like NWA didn't really push this guy better as a legit like world title contender for a guy we were speaking of a moment ago. The at the time world heavyweight champion Nature Boy Ric Flair. Because he just had the look. He had the look of a solid, like, contender, big guy, muscular. His promo skills were, they were all right, I guess. Cowboy Bob's Cowboy Bob. I love the pink hat and all that. By the way, I'm not sure if you'd said it earlier, JR, but Adonis was being subbed in. He was supposed to be in this match. Orton subbed for him. I don't know why, but.
Jimmy Hart? Is that what you said?
No.
Oh, Adonis.
No, Adonis was Orton is subbing for Adonis.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I think it's Jimmy Hart at first. I was like, oh, that explains the place. I don't know.
No, according to Graham, Orton is pinch hitting for Adonis, which kind of makes sense, I suppose.
Yeah,
but which means, of course, that the feud is there's a feud beginning now with somebody else who's going to be making his return soon. Why Orton's wearing a pink hat, we don't really know, unless he's a Red Sox fan. Oh. But yeah, I'm just stunned at why Billy Jack was let go by the NWA. I mean, the guy had everything. He was ripped. Crowd loved him. You know, pretty good looking guy, solid worker, power guy. I don't know. I think him and Flair could have had a good program. And then eventually, obviously, what would happen to Magnum TA within the next month? I wonder if they regret letting Billy Jack go, because I think he might have been a pretty solid babyface contender for Starrcade 86 or whatever, you know? So, interesting. But I thought this match was really good. I don't know why Orton had to win. That's the first of two instances tonight where I thought the endings were a little strange. The second one later on, I don't hate as much because I think it put a better character over. But I'm just really perplexed as to why Orton had to win this match. It just makes no sense to me. I don't get it.
I mean, the only thing I think of is that they're, obviously him and Adonis are getting this big heel push. Piper's just come back. They're probably just setting him up for matches with Piper, I would think.
Yeah, I think that's
I guess. I don't know. I would have done that against somebody else, not really against Billy Jack, but I don't know. But to me, it doesn't take away from the match. I thought the match was really good. I just thought the ending was pretty stupid. But 2.5 stars. I liked it a lot. Kel?
Yeah, I'm the low man on this one. I give it 1.5 stars, but I'm admittedly biased against Billy Jerk Haynes, whatever. Not a fan. I think it wasn't so much, Scott, that Crockett let him go. I think the WWF wanted him, so it was, you know, when they come calling you, you take that call.
True. But I'm just saying that I wonder if obviously...
Oh, he would have. Yeah, he could have been used definitely better in Crockett. For sure.
Particularly with what happens to Magnum. But that's all. No, it may make sense. I mean, I'm sure WWF threw a lot of, you know, scratch at him, but
yeah. I'm just saying. And when he was wrestling in Portland, he did challenge for the NWA title a few times against Flair, for sure.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was at one point the top babyface in Portland before he left. And Flair was still doing the tour the champ then. So, I mean, I love Orton. So... there was, I mean, some really good stuff with him. He made Haynes look like $1 million with his bumps, that's for sure. But yeah, let's go straight to the finish, because it's first of all, the pull of the tights was one of the best ever, as far as if you want to see a guy's ass. Well, you got to see
the full
Billy Jerk Moon there. Wow. But yeah, it's weird. Like, Haynes has been booked really strange in MSG for a guy that supposedly being pushed. He won by DQ in his first match, so not even a pin. Then there was the time limit draw / count out, or whatever you want to call it, with Hercules, and then now he loses. And it's just weird. Obviously they had reservations about him, even at this point, that they weren't going to go, you know, all out with him for whatever reason. And so, yeah, the strange finish. I'm not a fan of Haynes, so that's my justification for my rating.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that already we're getting the loss by Billy Jack. I mean, at least Orton cheated. He didn't pin him clean. I guess maybe he could have done like a count out or something here, I guess, if you want to protect Haynes a bit. But, I mean, Orton's got the cred, too, so it's like he's losing to someone.
Yeah,
you know, it's like Pedro when Pedro's out there beating younger guys or whatever. I mean, Orton's at least got you know, he's in the midst of a push and has the credibility, so.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we have a big tag team match here between the fabulous Rougeau brothers taking on the Hart Foundation. And, of course, we saw the Rougeaus back at the big event when they made the debut there, making their MSG debut at this show against the Harts, who I feel like we haven't seen in a while. They've kind of been treading water on the heel side. But the tag division is starting to open up a bit, it seems like, finally. Ray and Anvil open things up with a lockup, and Anvil quickly overpowers and lays some shots in, but Ray turns the momentum, landing a blow and tags Jacques. And the Rougeaus land a pair of double drop kicks to clear the ring. We restart with Jacques and Brett as Al talks about the families they came from. Hart works the arm, but Jacques wiggles free and turns some gymnastics into a drop kick that sends the hitman to the floor. Brett returns as Ray tags in and lands a shoulder block and then drop kicks Brett right back to the floor as Gorilla, Al, and the fans are just marveling at this attack. The Harts regroup, and then we start back up with Jacques and Anvil. Jacques survives a pair of shoulder block attempts but can't budge Neidhart. Jacques fakes a third one and slams Anvil and goes to a Boston Crab, but Brett breaks it up. Anvil smugly takes over, and the Harts go right into their quick tags and hard-hitting offense, mixing in some double teams. Jacques gets shoved to the floor, and Anvil follows him out and slams him hard to the concrete. Back inside, Brett's all over Jacques, clamping on a rear chin lock, but Jacques works free. Sends Brett flying with a monkey flip. Anvil tags in and sprints over to block a tag, hooking in a half Nelson. The Harts keep up their antics, baiting Ray in, double-teaming in the corner, and then trading off control. Jacques finds a seam and goes to the middle rope, but comes up empty on a dive as Al criticizes him for trying shit he's too tired to do. Jacques comes close to making the tag and then does, but the ref missed it. and the double teaming continues. Jacques finally finds a little bit of separation from Anvil, makes a tag. Ray comes in hot, cleans house, gets a close near fall on the Anvil. Ray hooks a sleeper on Anvil, but Brett breaks it up. Jacques and Brett end up in a race on the floor, and that ends with Jacques wiped out. Brett comes in, and they double team until Jacques flies in from the apron, traps Brett in a sunset flip. The ref just kind of meanders around for a few seconds and then comes over and counts the pin to give the Rougeaus the win, even though Jacques was not the legal man. Tough loss for the Hearts, but a really good match. Four strong talents, lots of good classic tag work at a crisp pace, no missteps at all, just great chemistry on display, hard-hitting offense, vintage stuff. Nice win for the Rougeaus as they climbed the ladder early on here. And I went 3 stars for this one, Kelly.
Yeah, I like this one too. I had a few issues with it, but I'll get to that at the end. First, I love the beautiful old-fashioned robes that the Rougeaus wear to the ring, like straight from the 50s, with the towels too. It's really nice to see. The Hearts have, pretty good selling to get the Rougeaus over, as always. I mean, that was the Hearts' specialty, was making the other team look great. And they do here. This was the Rougeaus' MSG debut. And I've really started to add an extra layer of appreciation for Bret Hart watching these 1986 shows, because he clearly stands out as one of the better workers.
Mm-hmm.
Just always makes his opponent look great. You know, he always gets the crowd to react in the desired way. Just everything is crisp, timing perfect. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people, especially in the PWO community, kind of downplay the Hart Foundation years for Bret Hart. But I think if you look at it, if you watch the matches at the house shows month after month and see, you know, just the context of everything and some of the real poor workers we've seen, Bret Hart was definitely one of the top guys in the company, in 1986. Yeah. And just great healing by the Hearts in the early going here. My issues with this match were there was a bit of, miscommunication at times, but this was maybe even the first time these two teams faced each other. So that's understandable that they're not exactly on the same page. It kind of halted the momentum of the hot tag, I thought, a bit. And the finish, the timing on the finish was off a bit too, where Anvil had to sell a 6 count like poor Tony Gurria had to against Harley Race a few months back. But I went 2.5 as well, because I really dug Bret Hart's performance in this match. And it just, yeah, this was just really good tag work. Because the Rougeaus had, of course, being brothers, but they'd worked together in Montreal for years before. So they were a polished tag team coming into the WWF. They'd worked together longer than Bret and Anvil had. So, good to see these two teams together. And it'll be interesting to see what the Rougeaus do going forward, because on Tag Teams Back Again with Marty, we were kind of critical of babyface Rougeaus from what we saw. So I'm interested to see what else we see from MSG from them and see if that'll change my mind any.
What do you think's been going off the Hearts? Like, do you feel they've been kind of, I know we're not watching everything, obviously we're just seeing MSG, but MSG is kind of the barometer. They were not at the big event, right? They were at the other show. And WrestleMania 2, they're just kind of in the Battle Royal, which I know was a big spot because they're in there with Andre. But I feel like really since those early matches of the Bulldogs, they haven't done much. They've just kind of been there.
No. And I think I brought this up on an earlier show where Vince didn't really see them more than anything other than a Jobber to the Stars tag team at this point, and that they were just there to make the teams that he wanted to push look good. And that was their role. So they didn't really win very many matches at all. They lost most of their matches, and it was kind of the whole unfortunate thing with Dynamite Kid getting hurt that put them in the spot where they got the tag straps to begin with. I don't think there was much plans for them beyond that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I gave this 3.5 stars. This match was out of this world.
3.5.
Three and a half. Your match times, by the way, we missed the last couple. The 4-star Kaniski Lombardi was 8:57. Billy Jack and Cowboy Bob was 9:31. And this one was the length of the night, 14:52, which made sense. These four guys, the chemistry was off the charts. And it's nice again to have another good athletic team here, because I feel like for a while, and maybe this is why, JR, we think this way. I mean, other than the Hearts and I guess the Killer Bees, athleticism really hasn't been the forte of the tag division right now. So it seems like, I think visually, that the Hitman and Anvil are kind of on an island right now, because, you know, we think of the other teams in the division, mostly the heel teams, they're all like older power strike guys who kind of go more deliberate pace. Well, tonight we've seen two fresh teams that are certainly not like that. We talked about the Islanders earlier, and now the Rougeaus here. And I think Brett and Anvil felt very motivated to face a team that they can kind of run with and go on a good pace with. So I think that's what made this match really good. And the other night I was watching a match from them, probably close to this or maybe a month later, from Boston, just as good. So obviously these two teams are motivated to face each other and make a statement, because obviously they're looking ahead to 1987 and to who the next big heel team or teams in general will be. And I think these two were going at it, you know, specifically for that reason. I think they went all out. Great back and forth. Crowd was red hot for them. It was just really, really good. And everybody seems motivated tonight, except the jobbers. And I said, I'll get to that in a minute. But everybody really seemed motivated tonight. And this is just no exception. I mean, I really think they put the foot to the pedal. And I really do think that right now in the company, the tag division is kind of going through somewhat of a transition, where we're passing off some of these older teams. One team I think is totally dead after tonight. We'll get to them later. And another team I think is slowly phasing out as well. And I think you're seeing a fresh renaissance in the tag division of teams. And I think you'll see more of them as we go through the end of this year and into 1987. And I think this is a great example of these two teams just going to the floor to see who could be like the next team to challenge the Bulldogs or just be in that talk. And I think this match proves that.
Yeah, it's clear that the division's starting to open up a bit. Like it feels like it was stagnating a bit, and now we're starting to see a lot of flux. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think these two teams are the perfect example of that. So it was. I just thought it was 3.5 stars. I thought it was one of the best Garden matches we've had in a while. Back and forth. The Rougeaus have just injected an unbelievable burst of energy into the division, and I see more of them is fine with me, just like the Islanders earlier. So 3.5 stars in your match time, 14:52, longest match of the evening. Next up, something that's not 3.5 stars by any stretch of the imagination.
My mind is blown.
3.5 stars. My mind is blown. All right. So up next, yes, it is the final match, Kelly Nelson, for the one and only old Tony Garea, the old war horse being put out to pasture here by the WWF after months of insubordination and hatred. Here he goes in his final match. And they don't do him any favors. He doesn't even get like any kind of nice send off, or I don't know. He gets stuck with Ted Arcidi. it's a slap to the face. So not only is this his last match, not only has he been buried month after month, here he is taking on old Ted. So big rematch after their disaster back in Toronto. Arcidi's still trying to find a way as a heel, but not really clicking for him. Arcidi shoves Garea around as Garea says Ted is not working with a full deck these days, and after being so nice when he first showed up. Al wonders if success went to his head. He says he should have gotten strong competition early on to humble him, but instead he just got a bunch of easy matches, and now he's arrogant. Garea tries to land a few shots, but Arcidi just shoves him around some more. Garea fails on a slam, but Arcidi gets a big one of his own and then spikes Tony to the corner. Arcidi slams Tony again, but misses an ugly elbow drop. Arcidi recovers and clubs away, but misses a charge, allowing Tony to work the arm. Gorilla mocks Arcidi's choppy steps, but the big man shrugs off Tony and slams him down, as Al says he should be working on his wrestling skills instead of just relying on his power. Garea shoots Arcidi to the corner and then nearly slams him off the rebound, but Arcidi collapses on Tony for two. Tony ducks a clothesline and lands a dropkick and a crossbody for two, but then he charges and lands right into a bear hug yet again. I think it's the same thing as a big event. So they give Arcidi the win. A tad better than that match, but still sloppy and aimless. Arcidi's as clumsy and awkward as hell. He definitely works better as a douchebag heel, but not much else. And really, Garea will just not be missed at this point. Just nothing. I went a dud here. And as D'Amato asked a big event, what the fuck is he jumping at? You'd think he would have learned when Arcidi catches him. Scott, your thoughts on the match and also the farewell of Mr. Garea, I should say.
Wish they'd both say farewell. The match is garbage. I gave it a dud because I just fucking hate Ted Arcidi. And again, I was watching a Boston match from a little bit later on, and it was – you ready for this one? Thank God, guys, we never got this, but the Boston Garden House show we watched had it, Arcidi and Tony Atlas.
Oh, I watched that, yeah.
I don't know. That was like, what was that, Nandrolone on a pole?
Well, that was supposed to be the big event match, right?
Yeah, and Tony Atlas, you know, fucked around and didn't show up. But the worst part is, look, we obviously know that Arcidi's on roids, but the fucking back knee is just ridiculous here. I mean, it's awful. I mean, the zits are just pumping out of his back. It's utterly dreadful. And it's even worse. We were watching. It was even worse at the Boston Garden show. I mean, the lights are better in Boston, I guess. It's evident. He's just so pumped up full of shit. It's not even funny. And I mean, he can't even put his arms down, for Christ's sakes. I mean, he looks like a warped midget is really what he looks like. And he just fucking sucks. I mean, I'm glad that they eventually figured out there's nothing redeeming about him whatsoever. And I mean, it's 4.5 minutes of fucking garbage, and that's fine. It should stay garbage. I feel bad for Tony Garea in some aspects because, here's a guy's a legend.
Guys are too
no,
nice,
no,
Tony
he's no, he's a legendary. Well, I don't say legendary. I shouldn't say that. He's a well-known WWF tag team guy, multiple partners. Can't believe I walked into that. and unfortunately he's kind of gotten one dumpster shit after another, and he did act like a douche to Harley, but maybe he was ready to just do
whatever.
You know, maybe he's ready to do backstage stuff and move on. But yeah, there's really nothing else. There's really nothing more to talk about here in this match. Make this quick, hell. No, I'm only kidding.
Well, I'll deliver the eulogy for Tony Garea's career, I guess.
Well, he actually is around to the end of the year,
guys,
right?
Because on Titans, you guys had the better stuff anyway with him.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we had the prime, basically, or the late prime of Tony Garea's
career. He actually, and just to clarify, he actually works into 87, like May. He's around until. So actually July. He's still wrestling in July, August.
Yeah, this is just his last match here.
Yeah, it looks like August is when he wraps up full-time, August of 87.
Yeah.
Wow.
And remember, he was only 40 years old at this time, so it's not like he was pushing 50 or it was some outrageous thing. I'm 40 years old.
Right.
for the Titans stuff, we saw – I mean, he was – in a lot of good tag teams. He was in a great tag team with Rick Martel, and he was in a very good tag team with Larry Zbysko in the 70s. And there's a lot of gaps because of footage in the 70s. You just don't get it. But Garea, he was, you know, not somebody I was blown away with every time out, but I mean, he was a very solid wrestler. Here we're seeing the end. I mean, his passion is gone. He's been relegated to this role, so he's losing every night. You know, it's understandable why he doesn't care anymore. And now he's having to put over a shithead like Ted Arcidi, who's, got into wrestling because he was juiced and huge. And, I don't want to speak for the guy, but I don't think he probably was a student of the game, so to speak. So this is sad. Total meaningless match, dead crowd against a horrible worker. That's the end of Tony. At MSG, you know, some of his greatest career highlights occurred in this arena. It's sad to see it end. And Gorilla and Hayes are shitting on, they're shitting on Arcidi, of course, very, very much his lack of wrestling skill. I mean, he wasn't too long for the company at this point. And actually, Scott, this is Arcidi's final MSG match.
Oh, thank fucking God.
So,
Gorilla and Alfred, they pretty much tried. They know that. I mean, the minute he turned heel, you knew that they were just going to fucking flush him down the toilet. And they pretty much – they did that at big event, and they pretty much do it here.
So what's his future? So we're done with Teddy? I thought maybe we might get him once more. So
he stays until probably early 87, but no more MSG matches.
Yeah, he was, let's see. Yeah, he was used by WWF in return of Vince. Yeah, so, his last match was February 14th, 87 in Calgary. Then he went to Stampede, went to World Class, and then he's pretty much
He wasn't
done.
In Stampede for long, because I don't really remember him being there. I went dud with this. You can't go any other way, even with it being Tony's final MSG match. I couldn't even give it a pity half star.
No, it's atrocious. It's terrible.
I will never give anything to Ted Arcidi other than a dud, and I won't have to because he's gone now. Bye. See you, Ted.
You should be nicer to Ted Arcidi, Scott. He was instrumental as the initial strength coach of both Paul Levesque and Joni Lauer, assisted them in getting contacted with Killer Kowalski.
Yeah, and they had their share of back knee too. So I don't deny it. So. I wonder if they ripped them off like the Hardys got ripped off by the Italian Stallion. Anyway, let's move on. This fucking schlub.
Are you ready to head down to Electric Avenue?
Yes, I'm pumped, baby. Right. Pumped for this one.
Mr. Electricity Steve Regal makes his debut here at MSG, taking on Jose Luis Rivera. Mr. Regal began training as a professional wrestler in 1977 under Rene Goulet, Bobby Heenan, and Wilbur Snyder. Gained the biggest success of his career in the AWA in the mid-80s. In 1984, defeated Buck Zumhoff for the AWA World Light Heavyweight title. 1985, teamed with the gorgeous Jimmy Garvin to win the AWA World Tag Team titles from the Road Warriors. Regal moved on to Jim Crockett Promotions in the summer of 86, winning the World Junior Heavyweight title shortly after entering. Left abruptly after only 2 months and joined the WWF, but never would catch on. And mainly used as a jobber before leaving in October, so I don't know if we'll even see him again. Regal never wrestled for another major promotion after a stay here. Retired in 1996. Mr. Electricity, indeed. Another MSG debut here as he's on the scene, going into battle, our old friend Mr. Jose Luis, who we haven't seen in quite a while. Rivera gets booed soundly, though. The crowd remembers him quite well.
Yeah, I know. They do.
Booed immediately. We get a mixed reaction for Regal. Gorilla says he doesn't know much about Regal, but Al saw him in Florida 4 years ago, and he was impressed then. Al says Rivera has all the tools to be a champion, and Gorilla calls him a fiery Puerto Rican. Rivera grabs a quick snapmare, and Regal complains of a hair pull as Gorilla asks why his hair and his beard are different colors, and they talk about that for a bit. Regal comes back with a snapmare and blatant hair pull, but Rivera plants him with a series of shoulder blocks into a side headlock. Regal kicks his way into control, but meanders through some offense. Regal hooks a chin lock, kicks away for some more before hitting a suplex for two. Gorilla says Jose Luis told him he hopes to tag with Paige Morales in the future. Regal goes back to a chin lock, but Jose Luis punches free. Regal kicks him back down and then hits a backbreaker for two before going to a chin lock. Rivera comes back with a backdrop and a slam for two, but Regal catches him with a belly-to-belly for the win. And Rivera does the old Tony Garea Memorial kick out at three. I wonder if he was doing it in honor of his final MSG match here. It reminds us that how big of an asshole these guys can be. I thought this sucked. I thought this felt like it was completely in slow motion. The crowd hated it the whole fucking time, too. They were all over it. I thought it was paint by numbers. It was slow. It was boring. Rivera has not gotten better at all and didn't really give him a chance to show anything. And I don't know if it was like an ironic thing. I'm not too up on Steve Regal's career. Like I remember actually, he was one of the earliest guys I saw wrestle because he was on some AWA tape I bought like back in fucking 1992 or something. But he, I mean, is it like an ironic thing that he's Mr. Electricity and then boring as shit? Or is he supposed to actually be, is he actually supposed to be electric? You know what I mean? Like, what is the fucking point of the gimmick? But anyway, I thought he was terrible here. I thought he looked awful. I'm not surprised that they gave him nothing out of the gate. I just couldn't get into him, and I thought this match was terrible. And I thought about giving it a half star originally, and then I thought about how much I hated it, and it just sucked the fucking energy out of everything I was, you know, enjoying with the show. So I went a dud. Fuck these guys. Fuck Mr. Electricity. What did you think, Kel?
I thought exactly the same as you, JR. It was a horrible match. Regal. Haven't seen a lot of him over the years, but he has a horrible reputation amongst hardcore wrestling fans as being the opposite of his billing as Mr. Electricity. He's pretty much Mr. Boring. I mean, he does have kind of a asshole jerk kind of look to him that should make him a good heel, but he just doesn't have his offense is horrible, boring. He's better at selling. You know, and that means you're going to be a jobber if that's your best attribute. We haven't seen cuckold Jose Luis Rivera since maybe even been the first show I did with you guys. It was a long time ago.
It's been a while.
This guy's been around forever and is boring as always. Gorilla Monsoon was quite surly tonight, mocking the wrestlers.
Oh,
and the refs.
Everyone.
And in this match, the referee, who I don't think we've seen before, he was pretty young too. His bow tie falls off, or he can't get it clipped on at one point, and eventually he just takes it off. And Gorilla was pointing that out. And yeah, it was amateur hour for that referee. Couldn't even get his shirt and tie on correctly. We had loud, boring chants, very loud, boring chants in this match. And Gorilla and Hayes were pretty much just hardly even paying attention. Rivera's comeback was met to total silence. And yeah, I went dud too. It's even more of a dud than the previous match. Maybe I should start giving out minus stars, because I got to start making there should be a difference between these matches, because this one really stunk.
What do you think, Scott?
I gave this a half star, and I love Steve Regal. I think he's a tremendous bumper, and I am fucking tired of all your cynicism and hatred.
He's
and
terrible.
I think you're both I think you're miserable bastards who just hate wrestling now, and I never want to hear you ever badmouth Mr. Electricity and his awesome studded vest ever again.
And his awesome chin lock.
And the awesome slow and walk. He was bumping like crazy for shitty offense. It was better. Listen, if we're going to talk about the fucking dud scale, Nelson, or Mr. Minus Star. This match was not worse than RCD and DeGuria, so it automatically is not a dud in that aspect. If we're going to grade duds, what do we have to have the dud scale now too?
No, they're all
dud
yeah,
plus
Dudley
one.
Scale.
Dud
no,
plus
they're all
two?
They're all duds. They're all, no, we don't
no.
need a scale. That is duds to me.
No,
see, I don't
this
do
was not a dud.
Yes,
no.
It was. It was it had zero
no.
redeeming.
You're
factors.
Just a miserable prick who can't stand Steve Regal. And you just can't stand all these jobbers, and you're anti-Jose Luis. Well, I guess I'm anti-Jose Luis Rivera, too. But this match was not a dud in the RCD Gurria dud sense. Regal sold well. He was bumping like crazy for really dreadful offense. And for 7 minutes and 53 seconds, I was much more entertained than I was for the shorter RCD nonsense.
There doesn't need to be levels of dud. It doesn't need to be a level of a dud. A dud is a dud. It doesn't matter.
No, a dud is not a dud. This
yes,
was
it
a
is.
Better match. No, no. This was. You're just a miserable bastard. And you, Kelly, the fucking weather's bothering you. Only minus stars north. No, I am not allowing Steve Regal to get trashed. I don't give a shit if his reputation sucks. Most of the wrestlers I like have shitty reputations, and I don't even fucking care. So Steve Regal, half star. That's it.
Wow.
Half star for Steve Regal. That's right. Boogie fucking woogie woogie, all right?
This watching the Electric Boogie at a fucking wedding is more exciting than watching this goddamn Mr. Electricity match.
I'm going to invite Steve Regal to a wedding. And
I'd rather watch Dan McGinn's fucking wedding party do the electric slide than I would have watched this fucking match.
Oh, God.
That rant over a half star difference.
You want to see D'Amato in that pimp suit do the fucking electric in his slow, very, very slow cadence.
Oh, God.
All right, let's move on.
Well, it was a good run, but the Place to Be podcast is going to end tonight. I've watched the United episode.
over Steve Regal versus Jose Luis. over the difference between a half star and a dud. That's
iconic Mr. Electricity. You guys are just brutal.
He put
miserable,
me at age 12
people.
On that fucking tape I had. He was part of that like six. I think we've talked about it here before, Scott. That like six tape set that I got.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yep. Yep.
I forget which one of those he was on. Tag teams, maybe tag team title wave. I think he might have been on.
Oh God, yeah.
Just
yeah. Oh, you mean like those really bad, like generic ones that have? Oh, yeah, I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah, like, but they had like some good. It wasn't all AWA because like Rude was on there. I think it must have had like some Memphis or World Class. It was like just all old random territory stuff.
Yeah.
I got him a job lot. all right. Well, we're gonna go from Scott's beloved jobber to Kelly's next because we have. Coming up here, we have Special Delivery Jones taking on good old Mr. X. The hits keep on coming. We haven't seen SD in a while. Like reunion night here at the Garden. SD has his island gear on tonight, and Al notes SD's new square top hair style as SD gets a hammerlock, and X quickly breaks free. X stalls a bit and whiffs on a right hand. Special Delivery tosses X around a bit, but X comes back with some kicks as Al talks about Delivery's career. The referee gets caught up in the mix and nearly gets wiped out as X drops Special Delivery and kicks away some more. X runs him into the buckle, and that doesn't work, of course. Jones bows up and sends X over the top with a hip lock and then kicks away some more. Jones goes for the mask, but X slips free and bails outside. He comes back in and controls for a moment, but he comes up empty in the corner. X recovers and mares Jones down, goes to a chin lock, and Al says, Special Delivery's slow tonight. Gorilla says he's moving like he weighs 800 pounds. Special Delivery punches back into control and again goes for the mask, but the referee forces a break. Jones keeps punching as this just meanders on and on. Jones gets a neck snap and misses a charge in the corner. X gets a sledge blow off the middle rope, lands a thrust to the throat. X misses a charge in the corner and awkwardly stumbles backward. Special delivery slams X and slowly goes to the middle rope and hits a headbutt for the win. Just another fucking mess. And honestly, I think this may be one of the worst matches. This is like the fourth time I've said this tonight, but this might be one of the worst matches we've seen so far. Both guys are slow and awkward. Basically rotated kicks, punches, headbutts, mischarges, everything you want. Jones is just a slug in this one, and X just looked like it was his first match ever. Just completely fucking brutal. On the dud scale, I give this a dud. What do you have, Scott, for this?
I am so tired of the Mr. X disrespect. No,
oh, God.
Is there any Mr. X comps you can make fun of now, too?
Kelly has one, I'm sure.
I don't have one. I'm going to make one.
You better damn well make a miss, because Mr. X and... No. I gave it as a half star only because I'm glad to see SD Jones win a match. Because he did the one trigger at the beginning, which means he wins. So I gave him a half star for that. No, the thing that makes me mad... Do Gorilla and Alfred live in a fucking wrestling bubble? I mean, SD Jones got a flat top. Okay, it's a common haircut. It's flat top. And they're like, oh, he's shaped like a square. What's with the square hair?
Was it new? Like, I don't know. You guys are more...
Yeah, at this time, it was a new haircut, though. Yeah.
Well,
especially for a guy like Alfred and Gorilla, who's like both completely fucking out of touch. It's like John Sterling and Susan Waltman at this point. It's just like, you know, quoting fucking musicals from the 50s like that. I mean, this is basically where they're at, right? Gorilla now, like, they have no fucking clue about anything with current culture, so...
Yeah, it's so bad. It's bad. But I could just tell by the faces tonight, like SD, Rivera, Gurria, like all the jobbers look utterly disinterested tonight. Like they don't even want to be there, and they pretty much most of them wrestled like they didn't want to be there, which is probably why they suck so bad, most of them. Yeah, I mean, this is bad. 8:09 your time, which is probably 6:09 too long. Alfred's trashing, like Alfred trashed like the kids in the crowd because one kid's holding was this the match where the one kid was holding like all the wrestling figures, all the like the big rubber guys? Was that this match? Well, it was the beginning of a match. I think it was this one. And there's a kid holding like three or four of the big wrestling figures.
I was jabbing shit in my eyes. I didn't have to watch it at that point.
He's watching it and he goes, oh, that kid, he cares more about those things than probably doing any of his schoolwork like most of the kids in this crowd. Like, what? It's trash New York's youth. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with those two? Are they drunk? Man, they were just so like miserable tonight. It's unbelievable.
I can't blame them. Look at this fucking card that they're watching at this point.
Hey, Lord Alfred knew who Steve Regal was, okay?
He saw him in Florida 5 years ago. He was fine there.
But, I mean, it's a pretty bad match. But I gave it a half star only because I just like seeing SD finally win a match. He usually never does. So, half star for me, Kel.
Yeah, I went a half star, too. If I wasn't a huge fan of mass wrestlers, or like American, North American mass wrestlers, I probably would have given a dud to.
Yeah. No, you get your reasoning, of course. So I can't.
Yeah, that's
Mr. Electricity reasoning. That's fine.
No, we all have your biases.
What if Steve Regal was masked, okay? What if he was masked electricity or Electricity X, okay?
Mr. Electricity with a mask would have been a lot cooler.
Exactly. What if Electricity X would be the name of the tag team. They could roll with the Islander.
Mr. X, by the way, was Danny Davis, actually.
Which is why he didn't referee.
Yeah. Oh.
Hey, yeah. Dave again.
So what a stretch of matches we've had. For you, JR, this was three duds in a row.
Vodka and tonic, goodbye.
And it totally killed the crowd. You know, wow, this was too much. Why have these three matches back to back to back? My one note is this match is like Flair Steamboat compared to the previous two matches.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. Maybe now, like today, Flair Steamboat, like right, literally today.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Oh, come on.
There was at least something. I mean, SD was trying to get off the mask, so there was a bit of a
ongoing story. You guys are fucking sad. You guys are sad. Where's Mr. X going to rank on your PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever list?
He's just going to miss the cut at 101, unfortunately.
Scott, you going to have Steve Regal and William Regal back-to-back in like the 30s? No,
Virgil. Steve Regal's not missing my cut. Kelly, you're coming on that show. I'm making you come on that pod blast.
Oh, okay. No.
We just did the pod blast. This is one fucking match. We're good.
Dear God, Steve Regal pod blast. It's tempting just for the insanity of it all to do that.
Oh, fuck. All right, can we take a break?
I don't think he was nominated, or I'm pretty positive.
No, I can't know. If Will didn't fucking nominate him during that day where he nominated every scrub who ever had a match, then you know. He's below the Taylor line.
Steve Regal gets less respect than Dick Togo, all right? So
Terry Taylor's my cut line. He's like the guy that like is so ambivalent, who actually had like a decent WWF career, but no one cared enough to actually put him into the list. He's nominated, but he has like one vote. Like, I mean, that just says how fucking milquetoast he was. And you have all these other guys that wrestled like three matches above him. But anyway, I digress. Are you done with this nonsense, Kelly? Can we take a break?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention the finish was so clunky because Jones probably hadn't won a match in God knows how long. I can't think of the last time I saw a match where Jones came out on top. So he was a little rusty when it came to winning.
Oh, yeah, he's rusty in general. He's lumbering around. He's been on the beach in Antigua eating too many coconuts.
This is when he got his LGN figure, though. So he had the new look. He was officially from Antigua in the West Indies and not Philadelphia anymore.
And he actually was wearing like the outfits and, of course, Alpha and a girl again. Do you think that outfit? Good enough. Do you think that outfit's Antiguan? No, it was made in Philly. I mean, come on, Alfred, for Christ's sake.
It probably was made in Philly. I doubt it was actually from Antigua.
It's right, mate.
All right, listen. Let's talk about the real Miss Electricity, Boz Scaggs. You listen to him right now. That means we're headed to break here. We're only a few more weeks left in the summer of Yacht Rock for the music, but enjoyable as always. Go ahead, Scott. Take us to break.
JR, seriously, 50-50 on the show. I mean,
it started well, but it's just been just awful last few matches. Like, I almost wish they reversed the structure of the card and had these three matches open the show, and then we could have built to something good. But right now, it's just like in the fucking tank after a hot start. It's like a Blue Jays baseball season. It's a hot start and just in the fucking shitter right after.
Hey, they're only 5 games behind you, Yankees.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we're going to talk about the Blue Jays in their heyday in a moment. Kel?
Well, the opener was one of the best openers we've seen, I think, for an MSG show. And then, these last three matches, usually it's like you said, JR, it would be reversed. Usually you'd have the three duds right off the bat,
right,
instead of in the middle. So they changed it up. Hopefully the second half improves.
All right. Well, we do have a second half coming up. We got some big tag matches on the way, and another really good singles match with two awesome workers coming up as well. Maybe it'll boost JR's grade up from zero. Cynic. But first, let us check some things going on around Place to Be Nation, because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
This is the King of Old School, Steve Carino, the true voice of Ring of Honor, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Survive.
All right, Nation, we are back here talking the September 1986 Madison Square Garden House show. Myself, Scott Criscolo, Kelly Nelson, and Scott, you know, it's been a while. 459 episodes, what, 6.5 years? And people stop me everywhere on the street, at the airport, and they say, why are you still doing this show? And I say, what can I say? Scott Criscolo, I'm stuck with you, so we have to keep it going. And that, of course, plays into the song that we're hearing underneath us here tonight to kick off the pop culture corner. That is Huey Lewis and the News. Scott Criscolo, bring us the news from this week in the world of pop culture, 1986.
I shall, because Steve Regal was in the video with Huey Lewis, because he was the News. Kelly Nelson. No, he wasn't. As you can see, yes, Huey Lewis, who had a great decade, is your number one song this week. In 1986, this is, of course, Monday, this house show. So this was on Saturday, the 20th, that this top 10 came out. And as you can hear, Huey Lewis in the News, Stuck With You, I believe was from Sports, which was a tremendous album, by the way, was number one. Number two, a little Dancing on the Ceiling, which is what I feel watching Steve Regal matches, by Lionel Richie. Lionel at number two. Number three, Friends and Lovers by Carl Anderson, not Machine Gun. Number four, still up, dropping out of the number one spot from the previous week, Take My Breath Away from Top Gun, from Berlin. Number five, Words Get in the... Oh, God, I hate this song. Words Get in the Way by Miami Sound Machine, although I hate both things by Gloria Estefan. Number six, the song that brought Aerosmith back from the dead, the duet, or I should say, I don't know if it's a duet. It's more like a septet or something. Aerosmith and Run DMC doing Walk This Way at number six. Number seven, Venus by Bananarama. Number eight, Don't Forget Me. A great song here, Mr. Nelson. Come on. A little Glass Tiger, Don't Forget Me When I'm Gone. A little Brian Adams singing in the background. Number nine, Dreamtime by Daryl Hall. Not a Yacht Rock cut, JR, because I don't remember Daryl Hall ever doing any solo songs. But anyway, he was at number nine. And number 10, Regina with Baby Love.
My baby so there's love. That one.
I don't think it's a Supreme. I don't think it's the Supremes cover. But anyway, "Stuck with You" by Huey Lewis and the News is your number one song this week. Came out on Saturday. Just two movies this week, JR, that came out on Friday the 19th. Both actually didn't do too bad, and both are actually fairly well known. This one made $2,444,076. It is a drama entitled The Men's Club.
All right, let's check that out. Yeah, it is a drama indeed. The plot, a band of friends go on a drunken all-night spree, spending a night in a high-class San Francisco brothel. And that is it. There's literally nothing else going on for this movie that they... here. It's noted for... Okay, hang on. So first of all, let me list two stars, and then we'll talk about what it's known for. Roy Schneider, Harvey Keitel, Craig Wasson, Frank Langella, Treat Williams, Richard Jordan, David Dukes... good name right now. David Duke, actually the up-and-coming high school basketball player, just named PC as one of his top five choices. So there you go. Tough day to be named that, though. Stalker Channing, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Anne Redworth, Gina Gallego, Cindy Peckett, and Gwen Wells. It is noted for a scene in which Keitel assertively denies engaging in masturbation. So there you go.
And it's Schneider, not Schneider. Schneider from One Day.
I was thinking Rob Schneider.
Yeah, no, Roy Schneider, the guy... Chief Brody and Jaws.
Yes.
And the number one movie, actually a very well-known movie by one of the most bizarre directors of our time, it made $8,551,228 by Mr. David Lynch.
Yes.
And it is, Kelly knows what I'm about to say,
mm-hmm.
Blue Velvet. I know Dennis Hopper was in it.
Yeah.
Blue Velvet. Isn't that the song? Atlanta Miles?
No, that's Black. That's Black Velvet.
Jeffrey Beaumont returns to his logging hometown of Lumberton, North Carolina. Is that where Tatanka was from? From Oak Lake College after his father suffers. He's a Lumbee tribe. After his father suffers a near fatal stroke while walking home from a hospital, he cuts to a vacant lot, discovers a severed ear. Jeffrey takes the ear to police detective John Williams, who becomes reacquainted with the detective's daughter, Sandy. She tells him details about the air case and suspicious women, Dorothy Valens, who may be connected to the case. And increasingly curious, Jeffrey enters Dorothy's apartment by posing as an exterminator, while Dorothy is distracted by a man dressed in a yellow suit at her door. My God. Jeffrey steals her spare key. I just got like a picture in my mind of it being the guy in the yellow hat from Curious George at the fucking door, and that's it. Get all thrown off. Kyle MacLachlan, Isabella Rossellini, Dennis Hopper, Laura Dern, Hope Lang, Dean Stockwell, Priscilla Pointer, Francis Bay, Jack Nance. And that is not the same. Who's this Kyle MacLachlan? Was he the...
He's the
FBI agent.
Twin Peaks guy. He's the Twin Peaks guy.
No, I'm thinking of that guy was in the OC. Wasn't he the... No, it's not him. Who am I thinking? He looks like him. Anyway.
You're thinking of, what's his name, Gallagher.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of. The guy, Peter Gallagher.
Yeah.
The guy from the OC.
Yeah, Gallagher.
Her father's the deputy, whatever the fuck it was. Remember that fucking thing? No?
Yes.
Okay.
No, he's the chief on SVU right now.
So
that's it.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
And that would be the first of many David Lynch movies that were a little off kilter. Mm. So. All right,
well, not even the first, like probably the fifth or sixth, going back to Eraserhead in the 70s.
I guess Blue Velvet seemed like the first one that made like real mainstream cinema. Because, I mean, Eraserhead was...
Yeah, Eraserhead was totally cult. But then he made The Elephant Man, which was actually a Best Picture nominee.
He directed The Elephant Man?
Yeah, he directed The Elephant Man.
I didn't know that. That's a good movie,
Dune.
Actually.
Yeah, oh, it's a great movie.
It's a tremendous movie. Anthony Hopkins.
My favorite... David Lynch movie, because I'm not actually a huge fan of his. Blue Velvet, a lot of people love it, but if you love Twin Peaks, you'll love Blue Velvet. That's about all I can say.
Yeah,
about
it's
that.
About as weird as it is. Yeah, I agree.
Weird movie.
Okay, let's go to this day in Major League Baseball. It was this Monday. I think everybody was in action. The Yankees defeated the Orioles 4-2 at Old Memorial Stadium. Bob Tewksbury won his seventh.
Fuck you, Kevin
Jackson.
And Dave
Rigetti.
Is he still around?
Who?
Kevin Jackson.
In the company? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is. Yes, he's still an Orioles fan. And Dave Rigetti saved his 41st game, which I think at that point was already the major league record. So congratulations to Rags. The Mets beat the Cardinals 5-2. Doc won his 16th. And the Blue Jays lose in Detroit 2-1 to the Tigers. Jack Morris won his 19th.
Ooh.
Jim Clancy fell to 14-12. The standings, Red Sox things are pretty much wrapped up. Red Sox lead the Yankees by 10, and the Blue Jays. Actually, Yankees and Blue Jays, identical records, 81 and 69. Angels lead the West by 9. Mets have already wrapped up the NL East, and the Astros are up 9 on the Giants. So the next time we talk, next show we do, I believe we will be in the
post. You know, it's funny, the October MSG, we can't find it anywhere, so we'll skip right to November.
Well, we also have another October show. So, so anyway, okay. But JR, it is time. It's been a while, my friend. Time for you to take the field.
All right, yes. I've been resting up all off season, coming off a hot 1985-86 with my picks. I'm ready to go.
Here we go, dog. The 1986 NFL season in full swing. Kelly's probably like, "What can we do the CFL?" Because nobody cares.
I know. I love the NFL.
Anyway, all right, well, you can pick along with us, Kelly, this year.
Can I do picks too?
You may, absolutely, of course.
Okay.
All right. It is week 3.
Scott, you better
of
be keeping score. Put Greeny on the job or something. He's got nothing else going on over there.
He's all right over here. The 1986 NFL season is in full swing. All right. Here we go. There was a Thursday night game for some strange reason. It was at Old Municipal Stadium in Cleveland, the Browns hosting the Cincinnati Bengals, guys. First game of the week.
All right, I'll take the Browns.
Okay.
Me too. Yeah.
Bengals win 30-13.
Rough start.
Yeah, Bernie Kosar did throw for 293, though. All right, all the Sunday games, which took place the day before we are on the air right now. Let's go to the Vet in Philly, where the Eagles host John Elway and the Broncos.
Denver.
Well, yes. The Eagles are my favorite team, but they weren't very good in 1986. They're at home. Well, I'll go with Denver too.
No, Broncos roll 33-7, even though Jaws threw a buck 91. At Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands, the Jets, 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 Jets host Dan Marino and the Dolphins.
Or I'll go Marino.
I'll go with the Jets.
This is the game, JR. Your throwback jersey boy. In overtime, a 43-yard touchdown pass from Kenny O'Brien.
Nah. Yes!
Walker, Jets 51, Dolphins 45. This was that game.
This is the defeatist in me. I had to go against my team.
Yeah.
Kenny O'Brien, 29. This was the game. Kenny O'Brien, 29 of 43, 479 yards, wow. 4 touchdowns and a pick. Dan Marino, 30 of 50, 448 yards, 6 touchdowns, wow. And 2 picks. And your boy, JR, actually probably one of my favorite Jets of all time, Wesley Walker, 6 catches, 194 yards, and 4 touchdowns.
Crazy.
A great day for the Jets, 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 Jets. Let's go to Foxborough. Sorry. Where the Pats, the defending AFC champions, host the Seattle Seahawks. Kel, you first.
Pats.
Yeah, same.
Tony Eason throws for 414 yards, but the Pats lose 38-31.
Good.
To the Seahawks. Let's go to the Metrodome in Minneapolis. The Vikings host Pittsburgh.
I'll take the Steelers.
I'll go with the Vikings.
Tommy Kramer, 257. Vikings win 31-7.
Yes.
Let's go to the Silverdome in Pontiac. The Lions with Eric Hipple hosting the Buccaneers of Tampa Bay.
Detroit.
Yeah, it's got to be. I think the Bucs only won 2 games there.
And this was probably one of them.
Oh, God.
Bucks win 24-20, even though Eric Hipple threw 318 yards. Let's go to the hole in the roof. God's team. And America's team. The Dallas Cowboys hosting the Atlanta Falcons.
All right, Dallas.
I'll go with the Falcons.
Fuck you, Chad Campbell. Falcons do win 37-35, even though Danny White threw for 280. Let's go to the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis. Talk about a team that was just as good as the Bucks were. The Colts hosting Mr. Dickerson and the Los Angeles Rams.
Rams.
I'll stick with the home team, Colts.
We're never letting you do this again. Eric Dickerson rushed for a $121. Rams win 24-7.
Nice.
To Buffalo we go. The Bills host the St. Louis Cardinals.
I don't much have a feel on any of these teams at this point. I'll go with the Bills.
Okay. Well, yeah, the Bills were as dreadful as the Bucks. I'll go with the Cardinals.
Bills win 17-10.
Yeah.
Out to the Coliseum in Los Angeles, the Raiders host the New York Football Giants.
Let's see. Giants come off a big year. Yeah, I'll go with the Giants on this one.
Yeah, I'll go with the Giants too.
Giants win 14-9 in a fist fight. To Arrowhead Stadium we go. The Chiefs hosting Mr. Moon and the Houston Oilers.
Chiefs at home.
Oilers.
Chiefs win 27-13, even though...
Never go against the Chiefs at Arrowhead.
Yeah, you're right.
Out to Candlestick we go. The 49ers hosting the New Orleans Saints.
Niners.
Joe Montana did not play in this game, but Steve Kemp threw for... Or it was probably Jeff Kemp. Jeff Kemp threw
wasn't
for
Jack
332.
Kemp?
No, it wasn't Jack. No, it wasn't Jack. No. Jeff Kemp, which I maybe it was Jack's kid.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
He sure wasn't one of Sean Kemp's kids.
Wouldn't be surprised. Niners win 26-17. Let's go down to out to Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego, where the Chargers host the Washington Redskins.
Skins.
Yeah, Skins.
Jay Schrader throws for 341, and the Redskins win 30-27. And finally, Monday night, going on right now while we're doing this house show, at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, the Packers host your defending world champion, Chicago Bears.
Bears.
Bears win 25-12.
All right, Kelly, we tied 8-8, so there you go.
Was it tied? Okay.
Tied
There's
at one.
A tie, so we will be back...
Back in October.
JR, you'll be back probably, let's see, next week.
What you should do is, for the Sinusman event, you should send Kelly the matchups and let him send his picks in.
Sure. All right, we'll do that.
I trust you.
All right, so next Monday, Kel, I will send you, confirm, it's probably week 5. Let me just double check. Let me click on Pro. I use profootballreference.com, exceptional site.
Okay.
It'll be week 5. So 2 weeks from now, in terms of the season, it'll be week 5. So I'll send you those games.
Cool.
And that is your pop culture report. I think we stalled enough.
Yeah.
I think we stalled enough on those shit matches, and we have to get back to the ring, unfortunately. So. Yeah.
Well, actually, we're going to go backstage where Gorilla Monsoon is there chatting with the machines. Super Machine says they're prepared many evenings for this match, and their friend Hulk Machine has told them many things about their opponents. And they're also using the worst fake Japanese accents ever here. Hulk Machine cuts a promo about working out with Hulk Hogan at the gym, where he put up 726 pounds, one more than Hulk could do to set the record. Hogan, in the to really hammer home the racism, in an era filled with racist comments, maybe one of the worst, when he says fripping instead of flipping. And he says it like 6 times to really make sure we hear him say fripping. Awful. And then Big Machine keeps saying hi over and over. Just awful. Just awful stuff. Awful stuff.
Terrible.
You guys
really
have any comments?
This was like
this?
Blackface, basically. It was. Just
it was
so bad.
It was awful. Just hearing them, And I guess at least the thing that makes it like whatever a little notch better than at the bottom is that they admit that they're not really Japanese and they're just pretending. Doesn't make it better, but at least they're not actually trying to pass them off as Japanese, you know what I mean? So
yeah. No, it was very tongue-in-cheek too, I guess. But it just came off to our eyes as being just horrible.
They may as well have taken the masks off and did like the slanty eye gesture or whatever,
Basically.
Gorilla is in with Bobby Heenan and King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd. Bobby says when the match starts, he'll single-handedly take apart the machines. Bundy says Heenan's great scientific wrestler that has no peers. Studd says Gorilla hates Bobby because he makes him look bad as an announcer. And they expose Hulk Machine's identity and say the machines are not really Japanese, and they have Texas accents, and they'll rip the masks off tonight to prove it. Gorilla's in with Harley Race, who says he's earned the right to be king and was officially crowned as such. Race says he'll make everyone bow down tonight and expects the acknowledgement from Tito, and he'll take it if he doesn't get it. He became king because he's better than everyone else and not because he takes people lightly. And that does take us right into our next match, which is Tito Santana taking on handsome King Harley Race. Nice reaction for Tito and a good little tussle on paper. race is officially king with the full regal entrance theme and regalia led out by Bobby. Fink still calls him Handsome Harley, though. Al puts over Harley's power as Tito gets off to a hot start with a dropkick, a slam, and an arm drag into an armbar. Bobby pops in on commentary as Tito's grinding the arm. Tito slugs Harley to the floor and comes out, but Harley turns the tide, shoving him into the barricade and dropping a headbutt. Harley rolls in and comes back out, but Tito catches him in the hot flurry and leaves him laid out on the floor. Back inside, Tito blocks a suplex and gets one of his own for two, but Harley comes back with a hard knee to the face and drops a headbutt for two of his own. Tito recovers and knocks Harley to the floor, but Harley meets him with a headbutt from the outside. Harley heads up top, but takes too long, and Tito catches him and slams him hard to the mat. The crowd is all fired up as Harley blocks the figure four twice. Harley stuffs Tito with a nice pile driver, but whiffs on a falling headbutt. Tito unloads to the corner and grabs a sleeper, but as he's fading, Harley sneaks in a low blow to break it up. Both are slow to get up, but Tito gets an atomic drop for a near fall. Harley punches his way back into it and heads up top, but Tito dodges a headbutt. Tito loads up the figure four, but Bobby hops on the apron for the distraction, and that allows Harley to roll up Tito for a sloppy pinfall win. I thought it was a hot match. It never slowed down. They cut a great pace. Both guys really laid in the bombs, too. Nice ebb and flow. I thought it was a good use of guys, and an extended feud would be great between these two. Harley continues to get a really nice, strong push, too, getting a clean win on Tito and MSG. I really like this. 3 stars for me, Kelly.
Yeah, me too. I'd never seen this before, and I'm a huge Tito fan. Surprisingly, I hadn't seen this. But at the beginning, we had a lot of garbage thrown into the ring because yes. The fans, I think, were rebelling against the previous three matches.
Probably.
Poor crowd was being tortured. But here we get three masters because we have Santana, all-time great babyface, Harley Race, one of the all-time great NWA legends, and then Bobby Heenan on the outside in the manager role. Just everybody was really doing really good stuff here. Race with his big bumps, his big spots, you know, typical Race bomb fest. And the crowd was hot for this one, too. And Heenan got great heat on the outside. They just were really on Heenan, hating him. And the crowd was super hot for Tito's comeback. Tito still carried himself as like a real star at this time, where he was coming off the IC reign, in big feuds, in a lot of big matches at MSG for a good 2 years at this point, or more than 2 years. So he was really loved by this crowd. And the finish was, yeah, it was what it was. Tito had to take the loss because Race was being pushed and was the new guy to the territory. And it was a really fun match. I went 3 stars.
What do you think, Scott?
Sorry about that. I had to turn my mic on. I also gave it 3 stars. I think this is a great combination. I think this was a good match to kick us out of that middle doldrum. The ending was a little sloppy, but I did like Tito really getting fired up that he thought he got hosed, which he did. Alfred just sometimes, I mean, and I was early on when we started this, JR, I was begging for Alfred because I was getting tired of, or Jesse, because I was tired of fucking hearing Mean Gene. But sometimes Alfred just doesn't know how to handle the TV aspect of things. He's, you know, you want when the manager comes to the broadcast table, it's supposed to be hit and run. You know, a couple of lines, Gorilla throws a jab, Bobby makes fun of him, we move on. Instead, Alfred's like, so Bobby, before you go, tell us about how your man Harley, who I seriously doubt will win, is going to... And it's this long, drawn-out fucking question. You're like, go away! I mean, like, sometimes I think Alfred tries too hard to be TV savvy, and it just comes off as very clumsy. And as I mentioned, the crowd on this night was really good, whether they were fucking trashing shit or marking out at stuff. They were really, really good. And this match showed it. I mean, the crowd was getting nuclear for Tito at the end there. And then to see him lose, I mean, literally get jobbed out. I mean, it was bad in that aspect. Bad from a kayfabe perspective, but great storytelling. And Harley's just a fucking stud. Now, is he past his prime? Yeah, he obviously is. But the guy could still carry himself in the ring, and he could still work things over. And it showed. The guy's a stud. He's a good guy to have on this roster right now. To kind of, you know, build up some guys. He gets put over a bit, and then he'll do some, you know, favor returning later on. But obviously, Harley probably needed some schkadol because I know he was having issues in the Kansas City territory. So I know it's another reason why he's here is to put over the is to get a little seed money
He did a nice job, though, with the King thing. Like, I like how they put it over.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Like, I like how he put over why he believed to be the King. Like, instead of it being a goofy thing, he talks about how he's the... Like, that promo before was, like, really, really good. Like, I thought they did a nice job selling the gimmick, you know?
Yeah, he's totally running with the character and the gimmick. And from a guy like Harley Race, who had issues with the WWF before... You know, you thought this would be like an embarrassing thing for him, but no, he's totally going with it.
And he's going to push. I mean, he's been dominant since he's come in. So, you know, beating Tito clean at MSG is no joke. So it's good stuff. All right, let's go on to our next match, which is our second to last. And it is an interesting one with the return of the former member of one of the Wild Samoans, Sika, taking on Lanny Poffo. And Sika is managed by the Wizard, who is, of course, King Curtis Iaukea. Curtis Piahu Iaukea III, better known by the name King Curtis Iaukea, began wrestling in the Pacific Northwest Territory in 1961, spent the majority of his career in the Northwest and Australia, capturing championship gold in both areas, as well as the AWA and WWWF. After retiring in the mid-80s, Iaukea began managing. That's the role we see him here tonight as the Wizard, serving as a manager for Sika and someone else we'll see next week. His run as a Wizard is very brief before he goes back to the Indies, so we will see him, though, on our next show as well. I thought Sika is a good addition to the low card heel side, as we'll see. He gets about our old friend, Lanny Poffo. Poffo reads a poem tribute to the Fink, which was kind of weird. Kind of out of nowhere.
It was weird.
Really weird. Gorilla says the sins of the world are written on the Wizard's face, and Al says he's a very strange person. Wizard hops on camera, talks about how the Grand Wizard is lost between the moon and New York City, looking over MSG, and then babbles some more. Al butchers things and says that's a Frank Sinatra line, ignoring Christopher Cross. Arthur's theme. Poffo's haircut is quite unfortunate, I thought, here tonight. We get some stalling and posturing until Poffo starts to work the arm. Sika kicks free and chokes and slugs away and then rips at the face. Poffo gets knocked outside and leveled by a headbutt as he comes back in. Sika's just mauling Poffo as the Wizard rants randomly very loudly. Poffo sneaks into dropkick, but Sika shrugs it off and hits a Samoan drop for the win. Just a real squash here, but I thought Sika looked impressive and was really dominant. Good choice to use Poffo to put him over well. And I thought Wizard and Sika were intriguing. I thought this could be a good heel pairing on the mid card going forward. I went half a star for this, Scott. And is that a Sinatra line or is it just Christopher Cross? You know?
Is what?
The moon in New York City. That wasn't a Sinatra line, was it? It's just Christopher Cross, right?
No, that's from the Arthur movie.
Arthur's theme.
From that song.
Well, I know that, but Al said, or Gorilla, one of them say it's a Sinatra song, which is not true, right?
No.
All right. Well, I didn't know if they're thinking of
Fly Me to the...
They're
probably to the moon.
Yeah,
they're idiots. Stick to wrestling, guys, because obviously you don't know anything outside of this building. So, I give it a half star. I think it's the first Lanny Poffo match where I almost called him Arthur, where Alfred doesn't say supple. I don't know. I mean, Curtis Iaukea must be two more guys that need a couple of paychecks, because I don't know why either of them are back. This match could have been better. I mean, I think Sika's kind of past his prime at this point.
The best that you can do.
Best that you can do.
Fall in love with a waitress from Picasso's.
I didn't like this match. I gave it a half star because, I mean, Lanny's Lanny, and he's always good. But I'm not a big fan of Sika coming back, nor am I a big fan of the Wizard. He was so annoying in this match, screaming into the mic, screaming everywhere. So annoying during this match. I really couldn't. It was a struggle for me to try to enjoy it. So, there's not much more to say about that. Although Lanny ditched the long hair.
Yes, has this weird, my like, son.
Yeah, now he's got this weird Poufant thing going on.
Yeah, his hair was
Poffo.
Awful. Just terrible. He should have shaved his head.
Fucking terrible. Fuck? Look like somebody's mother. It's like so bad. Again, I think, and obviously King Curtis and Sika need a little schkadol, but this match did nothing for me. Half star, Kel.
Yeah, that's what I went with as well. I think Lanny and SD Jones maybe spent the afternoon getting... new haircuts.
Like, what look like Kid and Play? Okay.
I don't know.
Kid and
yeah,
Play.
No. SD took him to like his barber shop, and yeah, Lanny got butchered.
Lanny got the Eazy-E, and SD got the Kid and Play.
As for the Wizard, yeah, he never really fit in at this time. He was you know, he was a legend in the 60s, 70s in Hawaii. Like, there's stories of matches where, you know, riots broke out. It was just crazy heat. His forehead is more blade scars than Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Just insane.
Yeah, I mean, that's like Flair and Dusty, like, put together. I mean, it looked like a waffle is what it looked like.
Basically, it's like he bladed in every match for like a 20-year stretch. But yeah, here, I mean, he was managing Kamala too. So they, with Sika, they wanted to kind of have a stable thing going of two similar guys, I think was the idea. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what Sika can do here. He gets a few shots in important matches, one against Hogan coming up on Saturday Night's main event, but nothing, no like stories or any kind of feuds or anything going forward. One and a half, or just a half star, yeah.
And your times, by the way, the Harley Tito match was 12:43 and this match was 7:28. So.
Ugh, that Poffo hair. Not good.
It's awful. Awful. Or somebody's aunt. So bad.
That's pretty bad. All right. The look at the guy from Coming in America. The what the hell's the guy's name? The singer. Anyway, the Machines take on King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd, and Bobby Heenan in our main event, a big time main event here, loaded up and hyped for weeks. Graphics expose the identity of Hulk Machine right off the bat for us. Good heat on the Heenan boys.
Arsenio?
They march the ring.
Huh? Not Arsenio.
No, the guy that's the. The guy with like that's hawking the hair cream and all that shit. What the fuck's his name? He's like the famous. He's supposed to be like the famous singer in the movie. I was gonna let it go. You got me back on it.
No, sorry, I couldn't go with that. You're gonna do that and then leave it in the wind. We gotta go with it. Go ahead, do your description. I'll look it up.
What the fuck was his name? It was I'm looking at the thing now. Randy Watson. He's played by Eddie Murphy. Plays him. He's got like the Jerry curl. No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay,
Randy Watson. All right. Where the fuck was I? Machines enter the Real American. Al plays coy about the identity, and Gorilla just flat out outs him. Hulk is in a mask and a singlet, which is kind of weird. The Machines clean house as Bobby hides on the apron. Bundy comes in and goes at it with Hulk, who eventually slams him to a massive pop. Stud eventually comes in, and Hulk smacks him and tags in Big Machine, who clubs away in the corner. Big nearly slams Stud, but Stud gets to the ropes and tags Bundy. Big grabs a side headlock, and then he and Bundy slam into each other with a shoulder block. A second one plants Bundy, sending him to the floor to regroup. Super Machine gets a red-hot flurry on Stud, nearly slams him, and then Big tags back in. Stud slams Big and tags Bundy, who tries to rip off the mask. Bundy works a front face lock and shoves Big to the corner, where Heenan lands a shot. Stud comes in, and Big tags Super, who unloads in the corner, but after a back elbow, Stud drops Super with an elbow and tags Bundy as a crowd chants for Weasel. Bundy misses a splash, and Super lands a kick to the leg. Bundy regains control and tags Stud, who slams Super off the top rope. And then Bobby tags in but misses the blind tag to Hulk Machine as the crowd just explodes. Hulk whips him hard to the corner, run through Stud and Bundy too. Hulk drags Heenan to the mat and tags in Big Machine, but Bobby flees and tags out. Big lays into Stud with right hands and tags in Super, who keeps laying down the blows. Super collapses during a slam attempt for a Stud near fall. Bundy tags in and crushes Super with the avalanche and tags Stud. Stud struts around. Hulk sneaks in and switches places with Super, and the crowd's just going bananas here. As Stud saunters over and grabs Hulk, but Hulk dodges the clothesline and slams Stud, wipes out Bundy and Heenan, drops a leg, and gets the win to a huge pop. Fun match as usual with these guys. Good to see Hulk back at the Garden. The crowd is really hot for all this. The Machines have gotten quite over. Pretty fun gimmick right now. Stud and Bundy are getting pretty cooked as legit threats, though. I mean, how many times can they be in these matches and lose?
It's
been going on for a year. Hulk really needs a fresh contender, too. Like, he's just kind of treading water. I mean, I know he's got Orndorff going on, but kind of just... He needs, like, another side threat, I think. Fun for a special attraction match. 2.5 stars here for me. What'd you think, Kel?
Yeah, I went 2.5 stars, too. I mean, it's hard for this not to be a fun match with all the people involved. But yeah, you're right, JR. I think that the matchup is the reason why the attendance was so low, as we've seen this a million times. With Stud, Bundy, Heenan against Hogan, the Machines, Andre, that whole combination. It's been, you know, the better part of 2 years now or maybe more. So it's I think that speaks to the attendance issue for this show. It's just not a fresh match, but it's fun, you know, in a vacuum watching this, you know, Hogan with the mask getting into the whole gimmick was fun. The crowd was totally into it. This was Hogan's first MSG match since April, I believe. So a long stretch without him. And his offense at the beginning was, you know, totally crowd pleasing. The slamming Bundy to a huge pop really got it set the tone for the match right off the bat. I loved the spot where Hogan tagged in while Heenan was in the ring, and Heenan wasn't aware that Hogan tagged in and was totally shocked that he was suddenly in the ring with Hogan, and the crowd went totally nuts for that. That was a cool spot. Bobby sold it great. Desperately trying to tag out, just total chicken shit heel to perfection by Bobby Heenan there. And yeah, Hogan, with the ending with the switcheroo was, you know, whatever, it is what it is. It's not believable at all, but you got to suspend your, disbelief with the masks and all that. And we get the slam, the big boot, the pin, huge pop, another, night for Hogan, another, big win for him at this time. Fun match, but nothing spectacular.
Yeah, I gave this 2 stars. I liked it. Crowd was hot, and I like the Machine's gimmick too. I think it's just goofy enough to be funny, and the crowd seems to love it. I know you thought it was weird, JR, and it really was, but I'm happy that Hogan went full out on the gimmick. You know, it was better than him just coming out like in his red and yellow tights with just the mask, and like that would have been half-assed. The fact that he actually dressed like them was really cool. Except I did like that he put his headband over the mask. That was badass, actually. I thought that was really awesome. And we were talking about Cook tag teams, like you said, JR. Stud and Bundy are done. They're just done. They're just going to keep jobbing and they're getting slammed like crazy. They're nothing now. They're shit at this point. So and that's what I was saying earlier about the tag team division kind of getting, transitioning to faster, more athletic, quicker. And we've seen a bunch of teams like that. There are 3 of them at least: the Hearts, the Rougeaus, and the Islanders. And Bobby's Bobby. You could see the slow beginnings of his years long feud with Hogan here. Well, not the slow because he obviously with Bundy, but it continues. And you know, maybe this was the final straw to what would happen soon. It was just a good overall main event, but you're right, JR. Even when your world champion feels like not floundering, because I mean, he's obviously making big money and he's still the man, but when you're stuck having to put him at like as a piece of something else as your world champion, that means that you don't have any foresight at the moment. Yes, he's feuding with Orndorff. But why didn't Orndorff like jump him or something? You know, like where was he on this show? Maybe he was in West Palm, but I would be having Orndorff follow him around is what I would do. Anyway, it was a fun main event. It was half. It worked. It served its purpose. And but yeah, Hogan's needs something special, and I think Stud and Bundy are done as a tag team. And
could they have done Orndorff like come out as a machine or something? You know what I mean? Like dressed up as a machine.
That would have been awesome. Could you imagine?
Wonderful, wonderful machine.
Right.
The wonderful machine, and he fucking jumps him. That would have been fantastic. But again, that would have required Hogan to look like a chump at the end, and they weren't going to do that. So that wasn't going to fly. Since it was the first time we've seen Hogan in months here in the building.
Yeah,
here
no,
in the
he
building,
had to be
so.
Strong and then give the crowd a big finish for him, for sure.
Exactly. So there is your card, which means, JR, it is time for
the awards.
Awards.
All right. Let's see. What's up first? Our match of the night. It's maybe a little diverse. I'm curious on this one. I actually went with Santana and Race. Would you have
Kelly? Okay, go.
Oh yeah, I went with Santana and Race as well.
I'm gonna go with Regal. No, I'm only kidding. No, I'm gonna go with the Hearts and the Rougeaus. I thought they were top of the line. Harley and Tito were very, very good, and I would put them a close second. But I thought the Hearts and Rougeaus stole the show tonight.
So there's levels of three. No, I'm okay. So the I mean that's I was narrowed down between those two as well. I had them graded the same. So all right, the Cousin Junior for the worst match of the night. It was tough for me. I thought there were 3 good choices, and I went with SD Jones and Mr. X. I thought they got more time, and for a guy, you know, SD Jones is a veteran. He just looked awful. The match was sluggish and slow. Nothing connected. It was just terrible. And maybe it was hurt extra by being the fucking, you know, last of the 3 real shitbag matches. Yeah. So, like, everyone's burnt out. But I just thought this was the worst of the 3 for tonight.
I think anything that goes after Steve Regal is going to be pale in comparison. No, I'm putting Arcidi in Degree. I know it was only 4.5 minutes. I get your point, JR, that they got more time, but that was just fucking garbage. It's just continuous garbage with him in the ring. So that was my worst match.
Well, I went with the one in the middle, Regal and Rivera. So we picked a different crap match.
At least they're all covered.
Yeah.
All right. Our MVP of the night, I went with Hogan. To me, when he's on, he's usually the MVP. He's the best. He's comes off as the best, looks the best, the crowd's into him the most. His energy and charisma is just second to none. So it's an easy choice on this card. No one else really stood out.
I agree 100%. Again, and embracing the machine gimmick did it for me as well. Like, he totally went full out, and I applaud that, so I agree.
I'm going a bit outside the box, I guess. I'm going with Bobby Heenan because he was involved in two matches, actually, and was a significant contributor to two matches. He was great as the manager in the Ray Santana match, getting great heat on the outside, and he was very good in the tag match. He was actually the most over heel on the team. He was the guy that the crowd, wanted to see get his ass kicked in the main event. So yeah, I went with Heenan for the double dip that he did tonight.
Are you guys okay calling this the Hogan Award, by the way? I'm gonna change it officially. I mean, he pretty much wins almost every time that he's on, besides going elsewhere.
Yeah, well, Savage has won his fair share too. Yeah. It's kind of between the two of them.
Well, Scott, you have to count them up officially. We can go with the most. I think Hogan, eyeballing, it looks like Hogan has the most. All right, next up we have the best. Make sure they're on the Uncle Elmer for the worst wrestler, and I went Arcidi here. I didn't give him worst match, but he's still the worst wrestler that's out there. Even though he had some stiff competition tonight, there was a few choices. You guys differ in any way?
Nope.
Hogan's won it 10 times.
Wow.
And Savage has won it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
Okay. Not even close.
So it's definitely Hogan.
Crazy.
Okay.
Definitely Hogan.
Scott, you're going to
RCD's the shit. Okay. Yeah, there's no doubt.
All right, best moment. I went with the end of the main event. I thought that was the hottest time. When Hulk switches in and then finishes the match, that was the best part of the night.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, I loved, my pick was when Hogan tagged in when Heenan was in the ring and the crowd popped for that. So, yeah, basically sort of the same thing.
And the Junior Mr. Universe Award, we give Teddy Arcidi his final one of the night of the year.
Yes, there's no doubt. Yeah. There's no fucking doubt. I mean, all that goddamn back knee, I think he wanted to steal the award at this point.
Do we want to rename it in his honor on his way out the door?
Yes, the Mr. Back Knee Award.
The Arcidi?
The Arcidi.
All right, we'll give
the Arcidi Back Knee Award.
Yeah. I mean, he would win regardless. I think he outpaces Tony Atlas easily.
Yep. I think he's the perfect. He's won it every time he's appeared.
Yeah, four
one,
times.
One, two. Four times, yeah.
Yep. Atlas may have won more, but...
Yeah. He's probably won Worst Worker every time he's appeared as well. So.
Not tonight. He probably did.
He's got a perfect record in that regard.
All right, overall grade, I know Scott's going to think it's low, but I just... That slop in the middle just really stalled the show out for me. And even though there's some good stuff here, like there's not that one match that really makes the show pop. Like, I can't say this was like a worthwhile watch. I mean... Tito Harley was good, but not enough to say the show's worth spending the fucking 2 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever the hell it was, to sit and watch. So I went with a 4 out of 10, which I think is fucking generous. I gave that the same as the big event, which maybe was a little bit low on the big event, but this didn't have a couple of the matches that show had. So I think I'm generously giving it a 4 because they were pretty good other than those three dogs. Like there was no other slop, but and I like the squash that was in there too, and Gorilla and Al entertained me on this evening, so I'll go with a 4. What do you have, Scott? 8, 9?
Well, first off, 4, you're brutal.
The show was brutal.
The stuff in the middle, I mean, the only match that really surprised me at sucking was SD and Mr. X. I knew going in RCD was going to be bad, so I kind of disqualify that match as ruining the show for me. I'm giving it a 6. The early part of the show, those first 4 matches are great. Tito Harley's great. The main event's great. There's more great than crap. You're just leaning on all that garbage too much.
No, but I just don't think those things are great. I think they were like very good or good. Like, you're giving shit 3.5. Like, you give the Hearts 3.5. I only gave 3. Like, I think two matches top out of 3 stars, and then everything else is under it. So, to me, there's nothing great on this show. It's just, you know, maybe very good in those two instances. So that's...
Yeah. Nah, I think we saw the future of the tag division really grow here, and anything with Hogan deserves a little spike. And the only match that surprised me as being bad was SD and Mr. X. I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be awesome, but I didn't expect it to be that terrible. Yeah, I'm giving it a 6. I have to wholeheartedly disagree, and I would recommend anybody watch the show. I really would. I think you got to watch the tag. I think you have to watch. Lombardi is, but I mean, I would definitely watch the opener with the Islanders. It's a match. It's a show worth watching.
Fucking guys trolling like Rover tonight. All right, what do you?
Oh
have,
my
Kelly?
God, you're just a miserable bastard. Why should being miserable be the popular decision?
All right, Kelly, what's your grade? Just get the fuck out of here. What's
your
grade?
Smile for once in your life.
Plus, it had your favorite worker of all time, Steve Regal, on the card. Yeah. So,
well, duh. Yeah,
I'm surprised you didn't give it a 7 or an 8. I went 5. It started off well with the hot tag, and it ended with a good tag. In the middle, I mean, basically all we had was Race versus Santana. Well, Hearts and Rougeau's was good too. But yeah, there was a lot of direct. But that's, you know, we accept that. This is MSG 1986. To get 3 good matches is pretty much as good as it gets. I've seen worse MSG cards, I know for sure. So 5 seems about right for me.
All right, that'll do it here tonight. I do want to note as well, I saw this tweet come across from Mean Gene. He said that Ric Flair had colon surgery. I haven't seen that confirmed anywhere else, but just wanted to call that out. So who knows? Well,
that might have been what the original surgery was he was going in for. I wonder if the heart thing is what made it panicky.
I'm not sure.
Because he was supposed to go in for something, and then this surgery today came out of nowhere.
His tweet just said, I have heard nothing on the outcome. This is 4 hours. This is 6 o'clock p.m. I've heard nothing on the outcome of Ric Flair's colon surgery, but the outpouring of prayers and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. That's just what he's saying.
Pocket or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. At least he got through that, and hopefully he's okay at the moment. So
all
stable.
Right. So that'll do it for us here tonight. Like Scott, you mentioned earlier, you have a new main event this week. It'll hopefully be a SummerSlam preview, I'm sure. What else you got going on there?
Yeah, no, definitely a SummerSlam preview. I'm not sure if it'll be Wednesday or Thursday. Glenny Bunn will be joining us. Mr. Glenn Butler will be joining us. And then we'll see if we can get Pete on as the G1 Climax concluded this weekend, and we have a champion. And we'll talk about that and some other things going on around the indie world as we head into SummerSlam weekend, and we will preview both SummerSlam and, of course, NXT TakeOver Trey as well. So that'll be this week.
All right, we'll have a new Letters from Center Stage up this week as well. You can check out last week's episode, and each and every Friday that drops on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Tentatively scheduled to have a new Jeff Learns Wrestling this week as well. We're going to tackle WrestleMania 3 as a whole, so we're looking forward to Jeff's take on that whole show. Hopefully we'll be up this weekend, and of course plenty of content for the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project as well, both written and audio. Be sure to sign up for that if you haven't yet at our Facebook group. You can just reach out to us on social media for details, and we'll get you involved at that. Subscribe to all of our feeds on iTunes, Pro Wrestling Only, PlaceBNation Wrestling, PlaceBNation Pop, social media, facebook.com/PlaceBNation, Twitter, Place2BNation, and we'll be back next Monday. Scott, just be you and I talking some Saturday Night's main event from October of 86, the big return after the summer hiatus and the return of Jesse Ventura. So looking forward to that as always. So for Kelly, for Scott, I'm here just stuck between the moon and Cranston. I don't know, something. So we're out. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.